There it is. Best theme song on TV, Sunday nights on the Fox. It's Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Is it Fox? It is Fox, right? 8:30 on Fox TV. I said that without looking at the paperwork, and I thought, what if I'm wrong? How embarrassing to give the wrong network in front of our guests. Ladies and gentlemen, she's one of the stars of Brooklyn Nine-Nine and a hilarious stand-up comedian, Chelsea Pretty.
Yay!
You've done a lot of radio. Was that the worst introduction you've ever gotten, Chelsea?
Sadly, no. No, wow. that was up there. I like that you don't know the network. It takes the pressure off for me to not know anything.
Bean did ask off the air how many episodes are left, and you gave him a very astute, you have no idea.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Don't tell Fox.
That's not your area. That's not what they pay you to keep track of.
Look, I know we're midway through.
All right.
Yeah, okay. That's something.
I am, I don't know if you, the guys make fun of me all the time, Chelsea, because I have this thing where I get pre-sad about things. And I am pre-sad that all of my fall shows are getting ready to just hit end of the road. They're going to dry up and they're going to be gone. And I'm going to go to my TV one Sunday night soon and there will not be a new Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And I'm already ahead of time feeling kind of blue about that.
Yeah. Are you part Jewish?
Would you think so, right?
Not, but he really, that pre-sad thing is something we've talked about. It's true.
Yeah.
In other words, rather than look forward to the, you know, two or three episodes, whatever is left, and just be happy about that, I'm already looking past that to the point where I've seen those already and they're in my rearview mirror. And
I'm already thinking about, like, when the show's over and I have no other projects and I'm just like,
That's way further.
Yeah. So I'm right there with you. We're kindred spirits.
Exactly. You understand my pain.
Yeah.
Well, we got a lot of stuff to talk about, including your new special available on Netflix called Chelsea, the very modestly titled Chelsea Pretty, One of the Greats.
Yes.
But let's talk 9-9 first.
Okay.
Have you done a lot of, was this unusual for you to be a member of this ensemble cast of a show? Have you done more guest appearances or have you been a regular on a series before?
You know, I hadn't done a ton of network TV before landing the role of Gina Linetti. I did an episode of Louie, the pilot episode, and a bunch of Kroll shows and stuff like that. But yeah, this was a big opportunity for me.
And you used to write for a lot of shows too,
I
right?
I did, yeah. I wrote for Sarah Silverman. That's what I came out here to write for from New York. And then wrote for Parks and Rec for two seasons.
That's a dream, right? Parks and Rec. That's one of the very funniest shows on TV for reals.
That's a good pull quote for the next one of the very funniest shows. it was a dream job. It was definitely.
It is super out there, so it must have been fun as a writer to be able to go there.
It is, because every writer at that show is just so smart. It felt like being in grad school, you know, and then we would have debates about whether which cakes are best, but all out full day things that result in ordering cakes to the office, but angrily, you know? So,
because
yeah.
It matters. That stuff matters.
Mm-hmm. That's what we were upset about. So things were good. Yeah.
Parks and Rec is one of my very favorite shows, as I mentioned. And it must have been so frustrating to do the work as good as it was and to not have it be a smash hit. I mean, that you must have just been a bunch of smart people sitting around a room going, what don't we know? Why aren't people watching this show the way they should be?
Well, I don't think that was happening in the writer's room. You know, I think you really are focused on the creative side of things. That might have been happening in some other rooms. But yeah, it's frustrating. But you know, it's a very specific time in television right now. You know, there's a couple shows that are huge runaway hits, but it's not like when Cheers was on the air, and you know, when there was just a few shows and everyone was watching them.
Right.
There's so many different outlets now that it's a transitional time, I think.
Do writers pay attention to the shows that other people are writing that are becoming hugely successful? Like at Parks and Rec, would there ever be a conversation about how do so many people love Big Bang Theory? Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I mean, just as a contrast to a show that was so much more popular, was that the type of thing that would ever be talked about?
Can't remember.
Good answer. Lady wants to work in Hollywood some more.
Can't remember.
What a great answer. All right. Let me ask you a follow-up question to that, then. Is Rob Lowe as dreamy in person as he seems on the TV?
He really is. It's ridiculous.
It's not right.
It isn't okay. It's just like, what is your secret? And I'm sure there's some secrets, you know?
You think he knows something the rest of us don't?
Yeah. I think people in Hollywood, once you keep ascending upward and upward, you start getting, like, doors opening to you with secrets inside of them.
So if you're... Oh, I see.
Yeah.
As you get to be a bigger and bigger star, you get more knowledge.
Yeah.
So he knows stuff.
Serums. More serums.
More serums.
Why'd you leave Parks and Rec?
I didn't know this was going to be such a hard-hitting interview.
You left. How come?
Oh, God. No, I left because, you know, I've always been doing stand-up. That's how they actually watched my stand-up, and that's how they hired me for that job, that writing job. And, you know, I was doing a lot of performing, and it was coming along well. And the hours as a writer, you know, are very long. So I was having to kind of wait and then cancel shows late night when we were pulling late night hours. So it just started feeling like I couldn't do it all. And so I left because I wanted to perform more. And then now we're working together again. So
so the schedule that you have now then as an actress and not a writer on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, that frees up a little more time for you to do stand-up? It's a little better schedule for you?
Yeah, a little bit. It's hard because a lot of times we'll have, 5 a.m., 5:30 call times. So it's hard to go do stand-up because I get very riled up after stand up, and so I can't just go straight to bed.
It takes you a while to kind of
decompress because, you know, I'm really high energy. I do a lot of cartwheels, backflips, things like that. Anything to get the crowd going.
Sure.
So it's hard to just lay your head on a pillow after that kind of spectacle.
Why are they trying to make people make funny TV at 5:30 in the morning? Is it just the days are, I mean, you have to do so much work in such a small number of days that you just literally have to work 18-hour days to film it all?
Believe me, I puzzle over it all the time. I don't know the answer. I don't, like, because, you know, usually if you're shooting outside, you're wanting to catch as much light as possible.
Right.
But we're on a stage, so I don't know. I guess it must be, I just think morning people rule the world. I think that if night people ruled the world, it would be just such a beautiful, beautiful world.
I'd like for night people to rule the world for a while.
Yeah, but you're in morning radio.
I know. We've always said about this show, the worst part about it is getting up and getting here and starting at 5:30.
Were you a night person before this?
Kind of in the middle, but I prefer to not have to get up. You know, my alarm goes off at 3:50, and then I lay there for as long as I can to the minute, and then I get up and go take a shower. And
so you were a night person dreaming of doing morning radio.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
weird. Uh-huh. Yeah. Chelsea Peretti is here on the Kevin and Bean Show. We're going to talk about the Netflix special when we come back in a minute. By the way, Chelsea, just so you know, we love Brooklyn Nine-Nine. We have had Joe in here. We've had Andy on. We've had Terry in here a couple of times. We've talked to Melissa. She's been in here a couple of times. So we have been really like huge supporters of the show. So we're really excited to have you here.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you.
I don't know if you can tell or not, but we really are.
It seems like a positive vibe. I'll
okay,
say
Brooklyn
that.
Nine-Nine airs Sunday nights at 8:30. I'm just going to say it. On Fox, and there may be several episodes left before it runs out for the season. Our guest is Chelsea Peretti. We'll be right back on camera. Chelsea Peretti, One of the Greats, is the name of the stand-up special that just premiered this past Friday, November 14th, on Netflix. You came up with that title, right, Chelsea?
Yes, I did. That'd be funny if you're going to pan it right now. I feel like you might pan it right now.
I enjoyed it very much. I thought it was very funny. I'd never seen you do stand-up before. I only know you as an actress, so this was a big thrill for me to see you doing stand-up.
I love it.
Tell me about that. Tell me, you know, it's a big deal for, you know, a lot of things in media have changed, but it's a big deal for any comedian to have their one-hour special. You've waited a long time to do yours. Tell me what you wanted to do going in and if it all worked out for you.
I just really wanted to do something I was going to be excited about. And, you know, I feel like there's a lot of stand-up kind of expectations that people, okay, now you did your first TV set, now you do your 15-minute set, now you do a half hour, now you do an hour. And I just kind of wanted to not feel like I'm just plodding along. You know, I wanted to feel excited and innovative. And I thought about the comedians in the 80s that everyone's always kind of looking backwards and trying to do exactly what they did. And I was like, wait a minute, though. They weren't looking backwards in the same way when they started out. They were trailblazing and figuring out the medium and kind of thinking on their feet. So I just wanted to feel that way for my special.
Was it hard in the early days to fill up time?
Yeah. I mean, it's weird. It's like when you're starting out, 5 minutes is an eternity.
It seems like forever on stage.
I was just thinking
about... just look at this interview.
And then I just, But yeah, I remember my first TV set, like just going over and over and over the set and like having it be so mechanical. And by the time I did it, I was just on automatic pilot, didn't remember it at all. And then you get stronger and you can actually be in the moment. Like in my special, there's a moment where there's an audience reaction to that I drank a pre-made smoothie and I can think on my feet and respond to them in the moment, just like I would at a comedy club, you know? And it's like, that's what you're working towards. Is not feeling mechanical, I think.
That's when you feel like an actual professional who should be up on that stage instead of someone who's faking the world out, right?
Exactly. Like, you're not just going, okay, here's A to B to C to D. You know, you're actually in the moment.
And here, right.
Bean and I, when we first started doing this job, this morning show, I remember us high-fiving each other because we were able to talk for 2 minutes. Like, that to us, it was like, wow, we did it. Congratulations.
And that's the beginning of an empire.
And now we can't even get the network right on a TV show in 2 minutes.
That means you've arrived.
Did you have a difficult, long transition to become good as a stand-up? Or
yeah.
Did you?
I mean, I talk a lot about confidence in my special and lack thereof and fake confidence, such as the title One of the Greats. But, you know, a lot of my peers have put out 6 specials in the time that I've put out one. I just never felt ready until now. And I'm really happy with what I've put out. So I feel like, for me, I'm happy with the time frame that I've
Was
done
there
it.
Pressure from anybody else in the industry no. or
no
other comedians?
Cares. No one cares.
No one cares.
No, maybe
no
there
one
will
was
be,
begging her to do a special.
Yeah, next year maybe there'll be pressure, you know? But no, I feel like I did things my own way, and I feel like actually I'm happy with it. That is reflected in the special, and so.
I have a bizarre question. I don't know if there's anything to this or not, but this just occurred to me, Chelsea, and that is, you talk in the special about the internet culture, how everybody is ready with their fingers on their keyboards to kill anything that anyone tries to say or do on the internet and just poop all over it, right?
Yes.
Is there any connection to that to stand-up comedy crowds in real life? Are people less patient now or more daggers out when they go see a comedy show to try to shoot you down, or do people really kind of give you the benefit of the doubt when you step up on stage?
Well, I think the internet really emboldens people because, you know, face to face, first of all, if you're the comedian, you have a microphone, they don't. You're already at an advantage.
Right.
And on top of it, you're generally a lot smarter and funnier. So if someone starts it up with you, you can usually destroy them. And if not, there's always, you know, someone at the club who can remove them if they happen to be hilarious, you know, and winning
the best
fight.
Of me. Toss him.
Yeah, that was witty. Get him out of here. But yeah, so I mean, I think the internet is a lot more people who are unhappy with their own lives and they're lashing out at you. And you have to kind of constantly remind yourself of that. They don't know me. I'm not a person to them. They're just lashing out because they're a stay-at-home dad, you know?
Right.
Or
and
whatever
that
it is.
Doesn't make them happy. Whatever their lot in life is, they're not happy.
Yeah, a lot of times it will be like a dad with a baby in his profile photo, and then he'll be saying the most horrible things to me. I'm like, what about when your baby grows up? Will you let someone talk like that to them?
Chelsea Peretti is here. Again, we're talking about our new special called One of the Greats. It's available on Netflix, and it's a beautiful thing because it's not like we come in here and go, well, it was on Showtime. Sorry you missed it. It's at Netflix all the time. Whenever, if you want to watch it right now, you can go to Netflix and watch it. That's got to be one of the draws of making a deal with a company like that, right?
Absolutely. It's unprecedented. You can promote it, and people can instantly watch it, and it's around the clock.
Is that why you chose that?
Yeah, I was just like, you know, it fits so perfectly with my lifestyle. And for self-interested reasons, it's like, wow, I use Netflix and now I can be on there and I can tweet about it. Someone can watch it. I podcast. They can watch it. Like, it's just it's perfect for the social media world.
If I were looking at your Netflix queue right now, what's the show or movie you've watched the most times on Netflix?
I don't like watching things that many times. That's more, I feel like that's a very masculine thing. I feel like
really?
guys like watching like the same movie over and over.
Ask Kevin how many times he's seen Fast and Furious.
How many times?
Well, I mean, you know, a lot.
just as an example.
This isn't about me.
So you're more of a, hey, I've seen that, now I'm going to watch something else.
Yeah, exactly. My boyfriend has a bunch of horror movies in my queue, messing up my whole, the recently viewed is all messed up.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I like documentaries. I think that's always fun to watch on Netflix.
Boring. All right, listen.
Sorry, smart person.
Do you mind, before the smart person goes, do you mind if I play a clip? Am I giving away your special here if I play 35 seconds from the show just to give people an idea of what it's all about?
I don't know what 35 seconds you have, so it's hard to say.
But I have your permission.
I'm going to answer for her. Yes, go ahead.
Sure. My black stepmother, which is what we used to call her. She used to do my hair when I was a little girl, and she would always call me tender-headed. She'd be like, Chelsea, stop moving. You are so tender-headed. I'd be like, well, I'm really just more of a white person. We we kind of have a two-Brett maximum on what we're up to with Brett's. Please stop sending me to school looking like Cat Williams. I'd like to do an impression of my dad, but I don't have a newspaper in 5 hours to spare.
There you go. Chelsea Peretti from her new special called One of the Greats, available on Netflix. And don't miss Brooklyn Nine-Nine as long as it runs before the end of the year. Sunday nights at 8:30 on Fox. So nice of you to come in. Thank you, Chelsea.
Thank you.
Everything you need to know about Joe Schmo. Coming up in the next segment, we'll be talking to Ralph Garman, a promising up-and-coming young actor who's on that program, coming back tonight on Spike. That's on the way. First, though, I hesitate to even bring this story up, Kevin, because I feel like we got plenty of vomiting on the show last month. Ever since Bieber threw up on stage, it seemed like we had too much vomit talk on this show.
Agreed. But, that's why we're not going to do it this year.
Have you heard about Vomiting Larry? Are you following Vomiting Larry?
He's
the internet sensation.
Is he the one that they're trying to figure out where the norovirus gets spread or how it gets spread?
Yes. He is a robot that they are using who has become very popular. People are talking about him online. He is a robot, and what they're trying to do is figure out why the norovirus, which I had over the holidays, by the way, which you don't want. It is some serious vomiting. They're trying to figure out how it spreads so fast. And they one of the ways that they're doing this is they're saying when people throw up, are there particles from that that go further into the room than we previously thought? So they're trying to figure out a way to track the particles from that the robot is vomiting up.
That's gross.
It is gross.
But if they could figure out how to keep you from getting it, wouldn't it be worth it?
I guess.
And they're trying to figure out, they're trying to stop it from spreading. Like somebody throws up in a restaurant, God forbid, everybody in the restaurant is going to get it because it turns out that these, you know, the stuff that's coming out just gets into the air and just goes everywhere.
So, especially with Vomiting Larry. Vomiting what a party Larry. This guy must be.
I don't want to talk to Vomiting Larry. That's what I'm saying.
Vomiting Larry's on the phone.
I'm not interested in hearing what Mr. Larry has to say.
Well, I think it's for science. It's important.
Okay, but it's not going to be one of those things, is it?
You had the norovirus. I certainly hope it is. He's Vomiting Larry. What do you expect him to do, Bean? Talk?
It's a good question.
Vomiting Larry the robot?
Good morning, Kevin and Bean. How are you?
We're very good. Thank you, Vomiting Larry. Can we just call you Vomiting?
Please call me Vom.
Vom, okay.
Now, it's true that you are a new kind of technology that scientists have great hope for to try to track how the norovirus spreads so fast, right?
Yes. My creators have told me it is very difficult to study the norovirus because they cannot cultivate that virus in laboratories.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so, through me, they are studying how vomit projects into a room and how may the norovirus be spread.
And how many times a day would you say you're called upon for your specific talent?
Well, I can throw up on cue.
Oh, on cue.
So as many times as the scientists need me to projectile vomit, I am capable of producing that.
I see.
Yes? What's your next question?
Oh, wow. Whoa.
I'm sorry. Whoa, we thought we were going to lose you there for a second.
That was close.
Just gas.
Okay. Oh. All right, good.
So thank God you're a robot, because for anything else other than a machine, this must be the worst job in the world to be forced to vomit over and over again.
Yes. I think a human would not enjoy my job.
Right, exactly.
I, however, have no problems with... Look at that over there. That's amazing. I just got some new furniture in the lab. It looks really good.
Hey, Vom, how are you feeling?
I feel great. Stomach, I feel really good. Thank you.
Stomach upset at all? Or
no, feel pretty good. Hmm. I had some scrambled eggs and bacon this morning.
Is that sitting well?
Sitting real good.
Wow.
I feel good. Thanks.
I was wondering, what do they pack Vomiting Larry the robot with when they want him to throw up? What kind of foods do they put into you?
Well, it varies. They can use almost any sort of fluid, and they test different types of fluid. Different viscosity of vomit travels differently.
Uh-huh.
They can also dye my vomit with a fluorescent dye, making it easier to track via
that
black light.
Sense.
I see.
How about now? How are you feeling now? All this talk about vomit sometimes will kind of bring up that impulse in people.
Oh, I've never felt better.
Really?
I feel great. Thank you.
But your name is Vomiting Larry. You don't seem to be vomiting much.
Well, I'm not on the clock right now, am I?
Oh, I
you
see.
You think I vomit for free, bitches?
Yeah.
You got to pay to see my spew.
I don't know what kind of deal you have.
Wait, we have to pay to see your spew?
You think I work for nothing? I throw up all day. I'm an expert. You don't get that kind of thing for free.
Oh, I see.
Okay. All right.
How much would it cost?
Well, how much you got?
like $50.
$50.
Yeah.
I don't poop for $50. I vomit.
Right. So, but how you feeling? I mean, just naturally.
Oh,
here we go.
Oh, I can't believe you would insult me with that offer.
Oh, come on, do your job.
Write a check, bitch.
Artemio Lopez from Castaic. Thank you for listening to the Kevin and Bean Show. Please enjoy On Us, the Arctic Monkeys, tomorrow night at Staples Center. Keep listening for your chance to win. Marilyn Ricecup joins us next hour, comedian and actress Adam Carolla in the 9 o'clock hour. What's going on with you, Kevin, in the latest Twitter fight that you're getting into your followers? What's that all about?
Well,
I saw some ugliness over the weekend, my friend.
I was watching SportsCenter, and I saw that Tiger Woods got injured. And to me, it's golf.
Yeah.
Right? Oh. Golf's not a sport. That's not a thing. That's not a thing, right? That's not a sport.
Well,
maybe it's a game.
Chess is
a game.
Right. I've heard that criticism of golf before, but you do know that it is incredibly taxing and draining to play professional golf.
That's
there is a lot of physicality involved in it.
They walk. That's it. They walk. You know what? You can be fat and you can be old. It's not a sport.
But you can do that in baseball, too. There's fat baseball players.
Yeah. Baseball's on the edge for me as well. So I tweeted, Tiger Woods got hurt playing golf, period. He was playing golf and got injured. That is all. And then a bunch of people responded, like, with anger. Oh, yeah, but it's not as bad as soccer because those guys hit a blade of grass and then they fall over.
But Kevin, don't you think there is, and look, I don't have a dog in this hunt at all, but don't you think that there is a certain amount of athleticism that is essential to be a good golfer? Which all involves, not only the eye-hand coordination, but muscles? I mean, don't you think physically you have to be in some sort of great shape to be able to hit a ball, straight and far?
Nope.
Really?
I do not. I do not. It's ridiculous. Let's be honest. It's not a sport. We've argued this before. Bean, you don't think it's a sport either.
Could you be a professional golfer?
No, because I'm not athletic. But just because it's a game that I haven't played my whole life.
No, that doesn't make sense.
I wouldn't be good at chess either.
There's tons of people who could play it their whole lives and could never be professional. It's really hard.
Right. It's really hard.
Really, really hard.
I'm not saying it's not hard. It could be super hard. Doesn't make it a sport.
Not a sport.
What's your definition of sport?
I don't know. Activity.
You have to run?
There's got to be some kind of activity, some kind of output other than walking. And by the way, they've got a guy to pull out the golf club for you.
Right. Of course they have a caddy. Yeah.
Because you walk that far, you can't pull out a club. That's too much to ask.
Well, look, we're going to take some calls if you disagree with Kevin on golf. He says golf is not a sport and not difficult to play, right?
No, I said it is difficult to play, but that doesn't make it a sport.
Okay. We're going to take some calls on that at 1-800-520-1067. Before the break, though, and before we go to those calls, I think we have somebody who might be able to weigh in on this because he's a guy who not only knows about sports, he hosts the Money and Petros radio show on AM 570 and is a hell of a golfer himself. Matt Money Smith, welcome to the show, my friend.
Oh, Kevin.
Look, I concede it's difficult.
Kevin, you could never. If you started from birth,
right,
you could not swing a club 120 miles an hour and keep it under control to lead to a ball going 180 miles an hour exactly where you want it to. You could never do that. Well, never.
First of all, that's where you're wrong. Second of all, if I did, I wouldn't be playing a sport. I would be playing a game.
Is powerlifting a sport?
Is powerlifting a sport?
Is powerlifting a sport?
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay, then you lose. Because there's no difference.
How does that work? There's no difference in powerlifting and golf.
None. It's a sequence that you use when moving your muscles in your body in order to move a weight up and down. Golf is using your muscles, coiling your body around your spine, creating a slingshot in order to provide force upon a ball to get it to go where you want. It's the same thing.
You have
thing.
To use force to do a Rubik's Cube, too, but that doesn't make it a sport.
Well, no, but I understand that, Kevin, but that's not what I asked you. I asked you if powerlifting's a sport. You acknowledged, yes, it is.
That's not a game ender. That doesn't end the conversation.
Golf's the same thing. It is transfer of weight. It's moving your weight from your back foot to your front foot.
Wow.
Uncoiling your body and releasing force upon a ball to make it go somewhere. That's what golf is.
Yeah.
It's basically being a pitcher and a hitter at the same time.
I think money brings up an excellent point, Kevin, that your initial criticism about golf is that you walk, you don't run. And I think he's
and
using an example of
power. Pulls out a club for you.
But he's using an example of powerlifting where you don't walk either.
Nor run.
There's no walking at all. Right, but you are still doing something athletic with your body that is difficult and is a sport.
It's extreme physical activity.
So is a golf swing.
Nah.
No, I understand what you're saying, Kevin, and there's old people and there's fat people, and apparently old people and fat people can't be athletes now,
well,
according to Kevin.
For the most part, they're not. I mean, do you see any of them in the NBA? No, you do not.
Well, the NBA is...
The NFL? Nope.
...predicated on endurance. You know, there is an endurance element to it, and it's being...
You know why?
...jog up and down a court.
Sport.
Like yeah.
It's a sport.
Yeah, but, you know, like I said, I think the one thing to understand about golf is...
It's not a sport.
It's a sport because, A, there's a governing body, there's rules, and it's a game of skill, not a game of chance. You know, it is. There is a skill to swinging a club, to directing a ball.
But there's rules and skill involved in playing chess as well, money.
But there's no physical exertion. None. There's not a single bit of physical exertion.
You have to reach up and move your rook. That has to happen.
But you don't have to. You don't have to coil up your body and then release it in perfect motion.
Yeah,
with perfect balance, with perfect weight shift. Just kind of, I think one of the things I try to explain to people about golf, and one of the reasons why it's arguably my favorite sport, is the idea
your favorite
that,
activity.
It's not an activity. Is the idea that just because for the casual fan, just imagine a football field.
Right.
Now imagine three of those football fields.
Right.
Laid end to end.
Uh-huh.
And you have to stick a tiny ball in the ground.
Right. It's difficult.
And cause it to travel
sure.
those three football fields. Okay. How do you think you get that ball to travel three football fields? Do you think it just magically goes there?
I think they have
a physical movement.
I think the driver is a pretty heavy club and does most of the work.
It's actually a very light club. It's the lightest club in your bag.
That's what I meant.
That's why you have to swing it 120 miles per hour. That's what I'm trying to explain to you. Do you know the amount? That's why Tiger's wrenching his back, because he swings the club so damn hard.
But don't you think other golfers go, dude, you're injured playing golf?
No.
Please.
No. And this would be my argument against the what a, old people.
What a baby.
It. Think about this.
What?
One of the things about sports is, you know, it's for the young, that your body
Agreed.
Will break down and youth comes in and takes over, and there's nothing you can do about that. Golf is so hard. It is so freaking challenging that Tom Watson, at 64 years old, because he's one of the 10 best to have ever done it in the history of the world, can still hold off young kids with bigger muscles that are in better shape because they can't get that sequence right. They cannot get their body to do.
You're making my point, by the way.
No,
if a 65-year-old can
yes,
play
I'm
better than any...
That's
name me one other sport where a 65-year-old can outplay somebody in their 20s.
And that's what I'm explaining, is that the sport is so... That's what makes it the beautiful game, is it's
the beautiful game is soccer, first of all.
It's not. Not when guys are biting each other and writhing in pain on the ground because a blade of grass tackled them.
Yeah, that guy tweeted me, they run into a blade of grass. But then my response to him is, you have to get up a lot of speed to run into that blade of grass and fall.
There's nothing beautiful about that.
Oh, how
all right,
you?
Listen, we're gonna have to press pause right now. I think Money has made some excellent points for our audience to consider. Kevin says not a sport. Money says absolutely a sport.
His favorite sport.
We want to hear what you have to say at 1-800-520.
I am watching Sergio Garcia on the driving range right now. Oh, yep. Look at that posture.
1067. Petros and Money Radio Show airs weekday afternoons on AM 570. Thanks for coming on, Money.
Thank you. We appreciate it. We'll be right back.
Trying to settle one of the great debates of our time. Is golf a sport? Kevin says no. Matt Money Smith says yes. Let's see what President Bartlett has to say.
Okay, well, golf's not a sport. It's fine, don't get me wrong, but let's not you and I confuse it with things that men do.
So we're taking your calls at 1-800-520-1067. Let's go to, well, we got some great calls on the line. Let's go to Chris. He's on line six. He gets us started. He is in Anaheim this morning.
Hi, Chris.
Good morning, guys. Good morning, Lisa May.
Good morning.
You're calling
what
to
say
support,
you?
You're calling to support me? The golf's not a sport.
No, I'm not calling to support you.
Oh.
Kevin, have you played it?
Yes.
You have played it.
Of course.
And you don't think it's a sport?
No.
What's the difference between, like, say, golf and tennis? You're putting a ball where you want it to go. Tennis, you're just running around.
No, tennis, you have to run a lot, and you have to react immediately. There's a lot more activity in tennis.
You can run if you want to play golf. You can hit.
Nobody
the ball
runs
run
when they play golf.
You should ask tennis how. You should ask Kevin rather how he plays golf, because I think it's with a lot of beer and his brothers, and they just ride around like they have never tried to actually be good ever.
Because it's not a sport.
That's how you treat
it. We play it like a game, which it is. It's a game. It's competitive. It's difficult. I'll give you all of that. Just not a sport.
No, but it takes strength, athleticism to be really good at golf. And because of that, it makes it a sport.
Thank you for the call, Chris. We appreciate that. Let's go to George. George is on line three. He's in Downey. He's got a little bit of a different definition.
All right, George, hi.
Hey, how's it going, Kevin B and Lisa May?
Hi.
Hey, okay, yeah. So I don't think golf is a sport. And primarily because usually sports, you got to work with other individuals. You got to work as a team. You know, and that's my main factor on it.
I mean, I'm happy that you're calling to support my argument, but I would consider MMA a sport, and you do that by yourself.
Right, no, half of the Olympic events you do by yourself, whether it's, you know, weightlifting or pole vaulting or anything like that. You don't have a team either.
No, of course, but the difference between golf and a sport, you get something out of it. You get you take.
All right, George, you've lost the room now. Thank you for the call.
I like George. He just doesn't like it. He's bored.
Let's go to Darren on line two. He's in Chino. I think he's going to get under your skin here a little bit, Kevin.
Hey, Darren.
Good morning, guys. How you guys doing?
We are good. Golf's not a sport, right?
Golf is absolutely a sport.
Come on.
It takes talent. It takes practice. It takes hard work and determination.
But
soccer doesn't take any of that. Soccer, all you do is run up and down the field.
Yeah, that's it. First of all, we're not arguing soccer right now, although I do understand a lot of people hate soccer. But just because you hate it doesn't mean it's not a sport.
But isn't that true of golf, though? Just because you hate it doesn't make it not a sport?
It could be a sport that I hate baseball. I consider that a sport.
Okay.
So, I mean, you can hate it and still give it, you know, be in a sport. Baseball's barely a sport. Don't get me wrong.
All right.
Come on. A lot of guys just go out there and stand there for the entire game and do nothing.
Let's go to Keith on line five. He's in Corona Del Mar. Hi, Keith. Welcome to the Kevin DeBee Show. We're running out of time, but please help us settle this debate, would you?
Sure. From my perspective, we've had this argument in our offices quite a bit. I'm the athletic director at Irvine Valley College, so I actually make my living in this area.
Okay.
And we never get a clear definition except for maybe one. There are lots of contests. Game could be contests, just like the Pillsbury Bake Off and powerlifting. Sport requires defense.
Requires defense.
Requires defense. So tennis, you have to defend against an opponent. Football, you have to defend. Baseball, you have to defend whether you're hitting a pitch or you're fielding a hit ball.
Same with boxing.
MMA. Defense.
How about
any of those, you know, I mentioned some Olympic sports earlier, even things like archery and things like that. If you're out there competing by yourself, there's no one trying to stop you. That is not a sport in your definition.
It is a contest. It's a game, just like chutes and ladders.
That is interesting. That's a potentially workable definition, I think.
How about that?
I like it. Thank you very much for the call. We appreciate that. Let's go to Jeff. He's in Newport Beach. He's on line eight. He's got something to add to the conversation.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, quick side note. The Beatles sport is actually women's beach volleyball. Moving on. Now, I think that it is a sport, but anybody can do it. Simple fact, simple point. John Daly, overweight, obese, alcoholic, walking the course, one of the longest hitters in history.
Right, but you can play sports drunk.
Yes.
I'm not sure whose side you're on.
I think he's on your side that it's not a sport because fat, drunk John Daly can do it. So it's not a sport. Is that what you're saying, Jeff?
No, I'm saying it is a sport, but I'm also supporting the fact that you don't have to be in shape to do it. You don't have to be athletic to do it.
It's a sport that you don't have to be athletic to compete in, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. Kevin can appreciate the fact that you can be an alcoholic and still get by.
That's true. That's true. He's got a good point. Thank you for the call.
Hey, I'm looking ahead toward this week's Kevin and Bean Show. We still have some terrific guests to come, including the great Hall of Famer Terry Bradshaw on the program tomorrow, talking about the opening of the 2014 NFL season. Love Terry. Always love when we have him on. Seth Green joins us later in the week. Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine is going to be on the program. Dash Myhawk will be here. He plays Bunchy Donovan on Ray Donovan, don't you know? So some good stuff coming up this week here on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock.
So they opened a Dunkin' Donuts Tuesday at 5 a.m. And when they opened the doors, there were 200 people lined up in line.
That's a lot of East Coasters right there who are, have been jonesing for Dunkin' Donuts ever since they left New Jersey.
I want to remind you again, 5 a.m., 200 people. That is crazy. Because Dunkin' Donuts is also going to sell donuts later in the afternoon and the next day and the next week and the next month.
I agree with you. Don't think I don't. But let me ask if part of it is I'm a Dunkin' Donuts enthusiast. I love it. It's a back home thing that's going to make me happy. And I'd like to spend that time and have a little celebration, have a little party with like-minded people. It's going to be fun to be down there in that line. Is it possible that that was happening for some?
No.
All right. Fair enough.
It's what, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. That's not a moment of party right there.
It's not a moment of party. Is this any different, Kevin, from the people who are lined up out in front of the Apple store 3 days before they know the new iPhone's going on sale? Because you can still buy the iPhone the next day, but they want to be there and they want to get it as fast as possible.
But I think that's a little bit different because you can't buy it the next day. A lot of times they don't make enough. They sell a bunch, but then they sell out and they don't get them back in. You can order them online or whatever. They don't get them back in for another 3-4 weeks. So okay. I guess maybe there's – but still, in the bigger picture, you could wait 3 weeks to get a phone. You'll be fine.
Okay.
And Dunkin' Donuts to me is, they're good. They're good donuts.
They are good
Dunkin'
donuts.
Donuts are good donuts.
And there are lots of other places to buy donuts,
right,
kind of your point as well.
Yes.
Or you could just come back to Dunkin' Donuts at noon and get all the donuts you want. Johnny Hoops is the guy that I made a reference to a few minutes ago. He was the first person through the door on Tuesday morning. He waited for 30 hours outside. But maybe it was worth it because he won free coffee for a year. That was the big grand prize for the first person in line, was free coffee for a year.
Okay, so that's for the first person only, right?
First person only, that's right. The next 99 customers got swag bags.
Swag bags?
Right.
From Dunkin' Donuts.
Yes.
Which include what? Napkins?
It doesn't say. What? It doesn't say.
That's not a good swag bag.
Well, we thought it might be interesting to take calls. This was the Dunkin' Donuts in Santa Monica experience for some people. We thought it might be fun to hear from you to find out what are we asking for? Lamest, dumbest, worst?
I think lamest. Lamest thing you stood in line for.
The lamest thing you stood in line for. These people, many of them, I mean, if there were 200 people in line, not everybody even, less than half of the people even got the swag. So the majority of the people in that line just bought a dollar donut. I mean, that's what they waited for, was a chance to pay a buck for a donut.
Not again, nothing wrong with it.
Right.
But it's nothing super special either. It's not like a Cronut or something like that where it's, you know, it's the Cadillac of donuts.
Yeah, and it's also not like buying a $3,000 TV for $600 a day after Thanksgiving either.
Right, that's the other time when people line up is, Black Friday. But but it used to be that you had to line up, like when they would sell concert tickets, for example.
Right.
It used to be that you had to get in line and spend the night and the whole deal. But you pretty much, you sort of don't have to do that anymore.
Well, we want to hear from you to find out what the lamest thing is that you ever stood in line for. The longer the line, the better. The lamer the item, the better. We want to hear from you toll-free at 1-800-520-1067. Our old friend Omar, DJ Omar Khan, steps into the booth now. Omar, this is right up your alley, huh?
We're in a booth? This is like, I don't know. When did the Simpsons movie come out?
Simpsons movie.
Six years, 7 years ago?
Yeah, maybe.
Something like that. So they did this promotion at 7-Eleven where they turned a couple of Southern Cali locations into actual Quickie Marts.
Yes, I'm sorry. I do not speak English. Okay.
That's right. I remember that well because I went to ours here in Seattle, too. They did 18 of them around the country.
Okay. And I was super excited about the movie, and I had a couple of buddies, and my wife now, she was excited about it, so we decided to go to the one in Burbank. Mm-hmm. And when we get there, there was a line wrapped around the block. We had to wait about a half hour in line to get into the Quickie Mart.
Okay,
and then the payoff was I got to buy a six-pack of Buzz Cola, which was kind of cool. A little novelty cola.
Sure.
And I bought a squishy.
By the way, let me stop you right there. The Buzz Cola, you know they took the crappiest, cheapest, most generic cola that is made
like
in the world
cola.
Today. Yeah, like that. And then they just put a label on it that said Buzz, right? You know, it wasn't like some special drink.
Yeah, and a side note on that. So I put that in storage, and the cans exploded.
Oh.
And it got syrup like all over a bunch of clothes.
Oh, you put it in storage. You went there to get stuff to collect?
To collect, yeah.
Do you have other Simpsons stuff?
No, not a lot.
That's insane. If you're Ralph and you've got a whole room of Batman.
Not really.
Then that makes sense that you would stand in line to get something.
Yeah,
but
no. I got
weird.
A squishy, and then I got one of those famous, Homer's famous for eating these pink donuts. And I got a pink donut.
Did you save it or eat it?
I ate it.
And was that worth it? Did you go, yes, time well spent?
At the time, it was fun, and I had fun with everybody there waiting in line and kind of, and in anticipation for the movie. And now in retrospect, no.
You're a dumbass.
That was a dumbass, absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's exactly what we're looking for. We want to hear your experiences, the lamest thing you ever stood in line for. 1-800-520-1067. We'll take your calls next right after this on the Kevin Beach on K-Rock. How many times a week does that happen now, by the way? Lisa's done it. You've done it. Muggs has done it all in the last, 10 days, right?
Yep.
What we're talking about is my Diet Coke was sitting on the ground, and Beer Mug decided that he needed to cover the floor with it, so he kicked it.
He needed to share that floor space with your Diet Coke.
I said, did I do that? He's like, no, I did.
I was like, why
Fantastic.
Did you lie?
We are taking your calls right now for the dumbest thing that you ever stood in line with. We were just talking about the huge line in Santa Monica, over 200 people lined up for Dunkin' Donuts. Natalie writes in, guys, the same thing happened to me when the first Krispy Kreme opened in California years ago. I'm ashamed to say that I did wait in a 3-hour line for those. I guess with stuff like that, you get caught up in the hype.
And
you know?
It's kind of fun if you're the first person. I mean, you've never had one, and now you get to be one of the first people that tries it.
You've never had one. Are you waiting in line, though?
Well, 3 hours is okay, considering what some people are doing. I respect 3 hours now. That's no big deal.
Really?
Well, let's take some calls at 1-800-520-106. And we got some great calls. Let's start with Denise. She's in Placentia, and she's on line 5 to get us going.
Hi, Denise.
Hi.
You waited in line for what?
My husband, not me, my husband slept in a Target parking lot overnight to get a limited edition Pikachu backpack for our 7-year-old, and then never gave it to him because he would ruin it. It's still up in my closet.
My
God.
He didn't give it to the 7-year-old because he would ruin it?
He would ruin it, he said. It's still in our closet.
Why do you still have it then?
Husband or the backpack?
Both.
Yeah, both.
Denise, does he think he's going to sell it for a lot of money someday?
I don't know what the plan was. The plan was to give it to the 7-year-old for Christmas, but instead it's up in our closet still.
Was he aware of the 7-year-old's problem of destroying stuff when he went and stood in line for it?
Yeah. No, I think he got caught up in the moment, and he was very excited with his Pikachu backpack. So.
Gotcha. Wow. So 7-year-old was just a cover.
Thank you for the call, Denise. I appreciate that. And by the way, Denise does bring up an excellent point. And I think we do have to make an exception for parents who are lining up for some toy for Christmas for their kid, right?
If your kid
really, really wants that fill in the blank, whatever era you're talking, Cabbage Patch doll or Furby or Xbox, whatever it is your kid, you're dying to get your kid for Christmas, I can sort of understand that you're going to go to extraordinary lengths to wait in line for that.
Because you would do anything for your kid. However,
if
you don't give it to your kid, now it's insane. Right?
Exactly. Okay. Let's go to Alec La Mirada, line 1. Alec, thank you for holding. Welcome to the Kevin Beach Show.
What's going on, buddy?
You tell us.
You waited in line for what?
I waited in line for a beer for 5 hours.
What?
A beer.
A beer? A specialty beer?
Yes. It's a triple IPA called Pliny the Younger by Russian River. It's very damn good. It's 11% and got a pretty big cult following.
Uh-huh.
So figured I'd hop in line, and 3 hours into it, I was pretty much over it. But once you get in, it's kind of worth it.
Once you've spent your 3 hours, then you go, well, I can't go home now because right. that's a total waste.
Exactly. And you do, there is a chance that they run out of that beer. So at any moment, the keg could blow and you did waste all your time in line.
Alec, here's my question for you, sir. Are you able to drink other beer while you're waiting in line for this beer?
No, you're out in the cold in February waiting.
I'm sorry. You're not winning me over
it's
with
a bad
this
choice.
Exactly. Thank you for the call. Appreciate that. All right. Let's go. Wow, we got some really good ones. Let's go to Tim. Tim is in Irvine. He's up next. He's on line six. Lots of different sorts of things people have waited for.
Hi, Tim.
Good morning, gentlemen. Hi, Lisa.
Hello.
You waited in line for what?
Waited 7 hours to see every Back to the Future movie back to back to back.
In a theater?
Why was there a line of 7 hours?
Because a lot of people wanted to see it. It was when the premiere of the third one came out, and they decided to make a marathon out of it.
Ah, gotcha.
And it was stinky and smelly by the time it was all done.
Yeah, you think?
Very much.
Hmm. So looking back on it in hindsight, a great idea or not so great?
Absolutely not.
Okay. I think that's we're kind of 50-50 on whether people think it was worth it or not. He waited in line as long as it took to see all three movies, by the way.
Yeah, true.
Yep.
All right, let's go to Jason. He's on line eight. I'm going to argue that his might be worth it. He's calling us from Hermosa Beach.
Hi, Jason.
Hey, Kevin and Bean, Lisa May.
Hi.
You waited in line for what?
Well, I'm embarrassed to say, actually, but I waited in line for 6 hours at the Whiskey to audition for Limp Bizkit as a guitar player.
All right, now, as much as Limp Bizkit is sort of a punchline now, that would have been an amazing career move had you made the band, right?
No, it was an amazing career move, but they were already dying hard at the time.
Oh, I
That's
see.
Why they were looking for some guitar player who had something new and something different. Basically, I felt like Fred Durst was going to steal my songs, is what he was trying to do.
That's what
it was all about. I was like 900th in line.
Is that when like Wes or whatever his name was quit?
I would assume.
I don't really know.
I was 900th in line, and they cut it off at like three before me, so I didn't even get in.
Nah.
You waited the best part of the whole story.
6 hours and never got in.
Never got in.
Wow. I love it. All right, thanks for the call. Let's do one more. How about Patty? Patty's in Torrance. She's on line three.
All right. Hi,
Hello.
Patty.
Hi, good morning.
You waited for what?
I waited about 9 hours to see the morning show DJs, and they signed my Christmas CD.
You're referring to us?
I am referring to you guys.
Yeah! But why would it never took 9 hours ever at anything we ever signed?
It was until about like 2 or 3 in the morning. It was at the Beverly Center, I believe.
Right.
Ages ago. I mean, it must have been in the 90s, I believe.
But 9 hours?
Yes.
I mean, did the person behind you show up like, I don't know, like 5 minutes before we started signing?
No. We went right after work. It was me and a friend of mine, and you guys stayed, which I thought was super awesome.
Oh, we wouldn't do that now. We'd say peace out now.
And Kevin thanked me for waiting, and I was like so starstruck. I just said, "You're welcome."
Wow, where is that tape or CD today?
Oh, I have it in my. I still have CDs. It's in my collection. I don't let anyone touch it.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
Unbelievable. Thank you for all of your years of support, and we're sorry about the 9 hours. It totally wasn't worth it.
No, it was absolutely worth it, and I wanted to thank you guys for all the years of entertaining me.
All right, you're crazy.
Are we being fired right now? What's happening? It's turning into a eulogy a little bit. All right, thank you, my dear. We appreciate the call. We got to clear those lines right now. What are we looking for? Same phone number, 1-800-520-1067.
We have tickets to the Sunset Strip Music Festival.
Oh, okay. Right.
Rodney is here. And Rodney
Rodney Bingenheimer.
Yes. He, of course, knows everything about the bands. And so there are bands that are playing there. Jane's Addiction, Empire of the Sun, Tove Lo, Big Data, Cold War Kids, and a whole bunch more. If you want to call in with any trivia question for Rodney about any of those bands.
Wow.
And stump him.
I bet there's so much Empire of the Sun trivia. I'm very excited to see how Rodney does with it.
So 1-800-520-1067. We'll take your calls. 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. It's Kevin DeBeccio. It is 25 minutes after 8.
Here on the 9th of Rocktober.
Try and catch us unaware, dude.
First thing this morning, Beer Mug said, I've been dropping the ball on having the Rocktober stab ready to go, but I promise you it'll be there all day today. Don't worry about it. So we're just testing him, and he's coming through. Well done.
He also said he will resign, or we can fire him.
You can fire him on the spot.
On the spot. All right.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
I love it.
Keep trying.
Hey, we're going to talk about Bar Rescue, an awesome show on Spike TV with the host of the program, John Taffer, coming up next. Then Dr. Drew joins us just after 9. First, though, how about a brand new Bean's Death Corner?
Hey, everybody, gather all the kiddies around the radio. It's time for Bean's Death Corner.
Bean loves death any time of day. He gets all giddy and screams, hooray. There's something wrong in his head. Death. We don't know what's wrong with Bean, but now you'll get to see what we mean. Oh, Bean loves death. Oh, Bean loves death. I love death.
There are a lot of fascinating stories in the news that involve people dying right now. Nerea Perez, 25, a Spanish lady. Man, I hate it when potentially hot 25-year-old Spanish women get killed. I hate that.
Isn't it bad, really, when anyone gets killed?
Yeah, but if they're young and hot, it's even worse. And you're going to respect the way she died. She worked at a vineyard there in Spain, and she was doing something where she was stirring the wine while it was fermenting. It's apparently part of the process. It mixes up the sediment with the yeast and the grapes. It's supposed to give a richer, fuller body to the wine, and that's what she was doing. Well, she became intoxicated, became overcome by the fumes of the wine, which I guess would have to be a real concern if you work in that industry.
Yeah.
And she fell over into the vat of wine and drowned.
Oh my God.
That is not how you would expect to go, but that's what happened to her. Winemakers say accidents like this are more common than people think because of the gases given off by the wine while it is being made. I mean, I guess just working around it would set you up for potentially being drunk at work. No explanation as to why Kevin is experiencing the same symptoms. There's not that much wine around here, but that's the way to go. Here's a story that just happened on Tuesday of this week in New Delhi. You know, there are fewer than 100 white tigers in the world. And India has 3 of them in this one particular zoo in New Delhi. And I'm curious to see whether, since they're so rare, whether they will try to put this tiger down because he killed a zoo visitor on Tuesday. It's not really the tiger's fault. The guy was 20 years old and was drunk and jumped into the tiger enclosure to play with the cat.
You know what?
You don't kill that tiger.
No, that's on him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would. Let's thin the herd of that guy.
I agree.
The
guards.
Good point.
The guard at the zoo says we do have tranquilizer guns, but we keep them at the zoo hospital. By the time we organized to bring the guns here, the tiger had already killed the man. By the way, it was a very long and complicated process to get the tiger to stop from playing with the man's body so that they could get in and remove the body. Apparently, he was in the enclosure for quite some time. There's a comedian. I don't know his name. I wish I could give him credit, but his old joke was every zoo is a petting zoo if you're brave enough. But I think in this case, maybe not a good idea. Also, other animals in the news. Here's a man in Hope, Maine, who established a... Did I tell you guys this story already? He established a sanctuary for retired circus elephants.
I don't think so.
He was found dead last Tuesday, stomped to death by one of the elephants that he saved.
Wow.
Which is,
an ungrateful bitch.
It does seem extremely ironic, doesn't it? He has been working in the elephant rescue business since the 1970s. In fact, two of these elephants that were in his park were elephants that he worked with when he was working with the circus back then. Mm. And I don't know what the mishap was or if it was an accident
or what. I heard it was an accident.
The elephant wasn't trying to kill him?
No.
Well, he suffered multiple chest fractures and died of asphyxiation. I mean, nobody wants to get killed by an elephant, but this guy, elephants for his whole life, maybe that would have been his choice. I don't know. Mm. Here's a story in the Death Corner this week that involves a man who's already dead, but something fascinating happened after that. At a crematorium.
Can we vote on whether we want to hear this?
At a crematorium off the Mechanicsville Turnpike in Henrico, Virginia, a 500-pound man was being cremated.
Wow.
The body was so obese, according to the man who runs the crematorium, that the actual body fat came off and went straight up the stack. I assume he's talking about the chimney and hit the roof material. The rubber roof that we had up there is what made it go up like it did. Yes, a fire broke out on the roof of the crematorium because the guy that they were cremating down below was too fat.
Oh, my God.
Three people were inside the crematorium at the time of the fire. All were able to get out unharmed. The fire was contained to the roof and was under control within a half an hour. However, the crematorium will be closed for a few days to repair damage to the roof and the furnace. I just don't understand enough about how bodies break down to know why it's that much worse, but maybe that much more fat? I don't know. And finally, in this week's Death Corner, we take you to Terre Haute, Indiana. This is, on the surface, it seems like a regular tragic story of a husband and wife fighting and a murder-suicide happening. Kelly Sampson, 50, was shot several times in the torso and head with a .40-caliber semi-automatic pistol. Her husband, dead beside her, had taken his own life. He was George Sampson, 54. The reason this story is noteworthy to me is it was their wedding night.
Yay!
What?
Their wedding night, not an anniversary?
No, their wedding night. The investigation revealed that there was a verbal argument between the couple toward the end of their wedding reception, which carried over to the after party at the couple's home.
Well, I mean, till death do us part.
Right? But who knew it was going to be in 3 hours?
Oh, my God. Do you get your wedding gift back?
I don't know what the protocol is there, Lisa, and I'm not sure that's the most important thing going through their friends and family's mind, but that it has to be. Look, I know people have horror stories of bad things that happen at their wedding or the receptions or their wedding night.
Yeah.
This has to be the worst, right?
Yeah, definitely.
How angry could you get on your wedding night?
Murder, suicide on your wedding night. Oh. That's why that story makes this week's Beans Death Corner.
That was Beans Death Corner.
Oh, Bean loves death. Oh, Bean loves death.
Oh, Bean loves death so much.
Congratulations to K-Rock listener Hazel, who about 30 minutes ago won the very last pair of tickets for a special evening with Coldplay, presented tonight by K-Rock and Beats Music. Now that the East Hotel is all sold out, I guess you can do what I'm going to do, which is to be listening to K-Rock starting at 8:30 tonight. Commercial-free Coldplay in concert tonight right here on K-Rock. That is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Kevin Smith, minutes away, on his way down here. In the meantime, some controversy out of Austin, Texas. Lisa, have you heard what they're doing to the school lunch programs there?
No.
They debuted Meat-Free Mondays this school year.
Well, I've heard a lot about Meat-Free Mondays. It's kind of a nationwide thing.
Yeah, a lot of people are suggesting, look, nothing wrong with eating meat, but maybe if we ate less meat, it would not use so many resources because it takes so much more water and land to raise cattle than it does to raise, you know, fruits and vegetables, for instance.
Right.
So maybe it's good for the environment to eat a little bit less meat. So this is a program at the Dripping Springs School District. They are offering meat-free lunch options on Mondays in 3 of their elementary schools. So you go that day and you can get the black bean burrito, you can get the vegetarian chili with cornbread, you can get vegetarian soup, spinach salad, cheese ravioli, grilled cheese sandwiches. I mean, these sound like pretty awesome lunch choices to me.
Well, yeah, and we're always trying to get our kids to eat more vegetables, and everybody knows that the more variety of vegetables and fruits you eat, the healthier you are. Because you're getting all those different nutrients. So this is a great way to introduce kids to all kinds of foods.
And they're not banning meat, by the way. Anyone who wants to bring a cheeseburger from home or a ham sandwich, whatever you want, you're still welcome to bring your own food. But they're saying in the cafeteria what the school is offering are non-meat options just on Mondays.
Okay.
Well, that is not sitting very well with some people, including Texas Agriculture Commissioner Todd Staples. Here's a little bit of the objections that he has raised.
You know, in Texas, we embrace freedom. And restricting children's meal choices to not include meat, we believe is irresponsible and really has no place in our schools.
Irresponsible?
He makes it sound like they're being invaded, doesn't he?
Oh, my God.
Meatless Mondays are part of an activist movement advocating a vegetarian diet for Americans. This is the man, by the way, in charge of the agency that administers the school lunch programs in the state. So he is at odds with those who will say Meatless Mondays are the way to go. So we wanted to find out more about what his possible complaint can be. So we asked producer Dave, could you get us the Texas Agriculture Commissioner? And Mr. Todd Staples joins us on the phone right now. Hi, Mr. Staples. Thanks for the time today, sir.
Good morning. How you doing?
Well, we're fine, but frankly, we're a little puzzled by the outrage in your statement about students on Mondays in elementary school just having a choice of meals.
Oh, you're puzzled by that, are you?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Well, I'll have you know, in Texas, we do not cop to the idea of activists pressing their agendas onto impressionable young minds in our elementary schools. Thank you very much.
But nobody is pressing an agenda here. Uh-huh. They're offering different foods on Monday. What's wrong with having a grilled cheese sandwich for lunch one day that week rather than having a steak?
They're advocating their special diet for Americans by taking away our meat one day a week, and I frankly won't stand for it. And this country was raised on meat. It was born on meat, and under meat shall it stand.
Well, they can have meat at dinner and at breakfast at home if they want.
It's a slippery slope, young lady. First you start taking away meat on Mondays. Next thing you know, Tuesdays is gone and Wednesdays. And the next thing you know, they're eating alfalfa sprouts living in a commune. And that's not what I want for my children. Maybe that's how you raise your children there in hippie California. But in Texas, that's not how we roll, okay?
What about the fact that there's way fewer greenhouse gases and way less water used in non-meat meals?
Well, let's just not have the cow drink for a day. Just don't give them any water for a day.
I don't think that's how that.
We'll make it up somehow. But meat, my friends, is what made this country great. Not alfalfa sprouts and baby carrots, I'll have you know. And first of all, I don't like them pushing their alternative way of living on children. You want to teach these young girls all to be vegetarians. Oh, you should be a vegetarian, young lady. Forget about men. You don't need that. It's all about vegetarians.
What?
That's not, vegetarian. No.
I don't even know what a vegetarian is.
I bet you do
there in California with all your hippies out there smoking your weed with your lava lamp.
It's not a thing, and no one has had a lava lamp for 30 years, Mr. Staples.
Not in Texas, they haven't. You're goddamn right. But vegetarians, we don't even have procreation anymore because people are sleeping with the same sex at that point.
I think there's plenty of kids.
Monday. Women will be meatless forever if they become vegetarians.
No, that's not what this is about. This isn't about not having men in your life.
And the items on this list, first of all, black bean burrito. Why the beans got to be black? That's what I want to know. I'm just getting used to brown beans. First of all, that was hard enough. Now I got to eat black bean burritos?
Well, they're healthy. They're good for you.
Oh, I'm sure you'd like people to believe that, wouldn't you?
I'm pretty sure that's true.
Your vegetarian chili. Oh, vegetarian chili.
Please stop saying vegetarian.
Baby carrots. Why are they aborting the carrots before they can become fully grown? That's what I want to know.
That's not what that means.
Let me support some baby carrot abortions. That's what Mondays is all about.
Oh, my God.
Sliced peaches. They're murdering peaches for Mondays. How about Peachless Monday? How about that?
Are you positive that you run the Texas Agriculture Commission? Because it sounds like you know nothing about food.
I have, and I do, but I have been drinking a bit.
It sounds like it. You know who we haven't heard from in a little while this year is LaQuisha. Aw, LaQuisha, I love LaQuisha. She's got something to say about everything, and she actually appeared on the Kevin and Bean Christmas CD, Christmas Time in the 909. Listen up.
Hey, Kevin and Bean, is Dow Doe.
Hey, everybody, you know how we have LaQuisha on our show, and she likes to review the reality TV shows?
Sure.
Well, we've got her on the line right now, and she's ready to review a Christmas classic. Hello, LaQuisha.
Hello, Kevin and Bean. Merry Christmas.
To you, too.
Happy Kwanzaa to you, LaQuisha.
Celebrating no Kwanzaa.
I was celebrating
Christmas.
Okay. All right. My bad. I'm sorry.
I was flipping around the TV as I'm wont to do, you know, because I love watching the television.
You do.
And I came across that show, The Grinch Who Stole Christmas. You know that little show?
Yeah, it's a classic. They show it every year.
Yeah, a little cartoon show.
Right.
So I'm watching it for the first time in a long time, and I said, damn, there's some things wrong with this show.
That's a perfect Christmas show. They show it every year. What could be wrong with it?
No, it isn't. I'll tell you something, all the little who's down in Whoville, they are celebrating Christmas and getting ready and stuff, and the one person who doesn't want Christmas to come is the Grinch, right?
Right.
That's right.
Every who down in Whoville liked Christmas a lot, but the Grinch, who lived just north of Whoville, did not.
Mm-hmm. You know why the Grinch is living outside the city limits?
Yeah, but he doesn't like people.
No, because he's the only colored person in the whole neighborhood.
Oh, LaQuisha, what are you talking about?
All the little who's are all pink and fuzzy and whatnot, and the Grinch, he's got some color. He's green, so he can't live with everybody else. They put him in the slums over there.
Oh, LaQuisha.
Oh, he's got to be the bad one because he's colored. That's why.
No one is saying that, LaQuisha. That's
exactly
crazy.
That's what they're saying.
Oh, you're missing the whole point.
I think you're missing the whole point. Mm-hmm. And then the Grinch don't like Christmas because of all the presents and whatnot that the Who's play with.
Right.
And they make a lot of noise and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Like this.
And they play noisy games like Zuzither Kaze.
What the hell's that, Zuzither Kaze?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know what that
is. What the hell he talking about?
Well, it's based on the popular Dr. Seuss children's book, and he was kind of famous for just making up crazy words that sounded funny. That's all that's
it. Don't sound like a job to have for a grown man making up words. Just shut up, Dr. Seuss. Well, anyway, he goes and takes all the toys and whatnot from the Who's, right?
Right.
He breaks into their homes and steals their Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not a secret subliminal racist message.
Oh, come on, LaQuisha.
Oh, the colored Who goes into people's homes and steal their gifts.
That's just not what it's about at all. You're missing the whole point.
Well, it turns out, even though they have no toys to play with and no food and whatnot, the people of Whoville are still happy about Christmas and stuff. And the Grinch, he changes his mind and learns the real meaning of Christmas.
That's right. That's right, LaQuisha. That's a beautiful message that the spirit of Christmas is that it's not about the presents you get. It's about the being together with your friends and family for the holiday.
Yeah, and this is what happens to him when he discovers that.
And what happened then? Well, in Whoville, they say that the Grinch's small heart grew three sizes that day.
Oh, like that's a good thing?
His heart grew bigger.
I had a cousin who had a large heart. My cousin, Kleniqua, and she had to go to hospital because her heart got enlarged.
No, but his heart was so tiny to begin with.
That's a lie to say your heart gets big, that's a good thing for Christmas, because she happened to her in the holidays,
LaQuisha,
and she missed out on all the holidays being in a hospital.
LaQuisha, who hurt you?
I'm just saying this show is not right for Christmas time. And then the Grinch, who is colored again, if I remind you, he learns a special lesson. They invite him to come and sit down and carve the rare Who beast or whatever they're cooking, and everybody has a good time. Mm-hmm. Like, he steals their stuff, and they just go, welcome in on in. Oh, sit down. Have yourself a meal. Try that in my neighborhood. You get cut.
Well, no one wants that.
No, but it's the spirit of Christmas. They're saying, we understand what you're going through. You understand what we're going through. Let's all get together and hold hands and have a meal.
Yeah, I know. That's the lesson we're all supposed to
learn.
And here's the little lesson everyone gets told at the end of the show.
Christmas Day is in our grasp, so long as we have hands to clasp. Christmas Day will always be just as long as we have we. Welcome Christmas while we stand heart to heart and hand in hand.
Aw.
I gotta go. I got something in my eye.
Aw, see?
Oh, LaQuisha.
I gotta go now. I gotta get off the phone.
Merry Christmas, LaQuisha.
Oh, Merry Christmas.
When you need somebody to stand up for justice, the Kevin and Bean Show is there. And that's exactly what we're doing in this time, because there is a problem, ladies and gentlemen. There's a problem that we need to deal with, and there's a problem that involves our favorite little woman, Brittany. Miss Double December 2014, who joins us back on the Kevin and Bean Show for the first time, I think, in the new year. Hi, Brittany. How are you?
Hi. Good. How are you guys?
Well, Kevin's out today, I'm sorry to say, so you don't get to say hi to him, but we miss you and we love you, and I love following you on Twitter, and our listeners should at Britt, B-R-I-T-T, Bricks, B-R-I-X-X, because there's so much drama in your life, girl, it's like watching a Real Housewives episode.
And I love it.
I mean, yesterday, was this for reals or were you just joking around? Were there penises showing up in your Instagram feed yesterday?
Yes. I got my first penis picture on Instagram Direct.
Beer Bug, I didn't even know you were on Instagram.
Oh,
What's going on here?
Absolutely.
And then we don't even have time to get into it now, but you also tweeted something last week. You were listening to the show. We were talking about somebody getting arrested for something, and you were tweeting about your own arrest, which I didn't even know about. But I think we're going to have to save that for another time. But you literally did get arrested, right?
I did, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You have the craziest life, Brittany. All right.
I know.
What can we help you with today? What's going on? What's this problem you have at work?
So I got called in to my human resources manager's office
because my dress was too short at work.
Ooh.
Boo-hoo.
Yeah.
What kind of, don't give too many details away, what kind of place are you working in, Brittany?
I work at a bank.
Mm-hmm. You work at a bank? Okay.
Yeah, so there's definitely a dress code.
Yep.
And what do you know about that dress code? Like, what in general, what do they tell the people that work there? I mean, obviously, business professional is the mode in most banks, right?
Correct.
And have you ever had have you ever had any problems with them before?
Oh yeah.
How many times have they talked to you, Brittany?
The dress code thing has been a problem my whole entire life.
The thing that I was surprised about, by the way, we did put this picture up. I know that you're, because Brittany was kind enough to tweet it out the other day. It is up at krock.com or kevinb.com. If you want to see the photo that we're talking about, Brittany got spoken to at work because her dress was too short. So we did put the picture up there. And we've also added a poll so that you can vote whether you agree with the bank or agree with Brittany. And I'm telling you, there's only one right answer here. Yeah. The thing that I was surprised about, Brittany, and you must run into this problem all the time, is you would expect that if there's a complaint to you, it would be about your boobs. But your boobs are pretty well covered up in this dress anyway.
Yeah, I always cover my boobs at work because I don't want the extra attention when I'm trying to do my job. It's very distracting when people are looking at my chest. So I tend to cover up my boobs but show my legs a little bit. And I'm 5'8", so a dress on me is going to look a little shorter than, say, someone who's 5'4 or something.
Right. And so what do they do in this case? Is this like in school when you're wearing a, you know, you're wearing a gang sign on your T-shirt, they make you put something else on top of it to stay in school, or they send you home to change? What do they do to you?
Well, fortunately, this time I didn't get sent home to change. They did warn me that the next time I would be sent home with no pay or possibly suspended and maybe even termination.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
You're serious.
Lisa, have you brought up krock.com? Are you looking at the photo?
I saw the photo.
Lisa.
Well, I wouldn't call it business attire. Even if it were longer, I don't think I would call it that. It's just a little too lacy. It doesn't fit a bank. I've worked in banks and would never have worn something like that. You look great, but I kind of see their point.
I kind of see it too, but at the same time, I'm young. I want to add my own style to things and, you know, I want to look cute. But
yeah. It might take a little more work on your part to get it by the censors.
Maybe.
Again, you can go to krock.com or kevinb.com. You can see the picture of Miss Double D Brittany, who got spoken to at work because the dress was too short. Kevin tweeted you back that day that it happened, by the way, that you should have gotten a bonus, WTF, and I totally agree with that.
I agree with that, too.
As of right now, by the way, the voting is 70% know she looks great, 30% pull that skirt down a bit. So apparently 30% of Kevin and Bean listeners are the Taliban, which I am very distressed about. I didn't realize that. So Brittany, is this a struggle that you go through every morning as you're laying out your clothes for work? Is, all right, how can I feel the best at work today but also not get in trouble and lose my job as a result of it?
Yeah, it's pretty tough.
Well, you keep doing the Lord's work, Brittany, and you keep you dress however the hell you want, all right?
Thank you.
Bean will pay you if you get suspended without pay. Right, Bean?
I didn't hear that. But,
oh, okay.
Again,
I thought that's what you were saying.
You should follow Brittany on Twitter at BrittBricks. And where's your – you got an Instagram, too. Where can people follow that, too, Britt?
It's the same name, at BrittBricks.
Okay, great. Now, I thought this would be fun, and you should listen, Brittany. We're going to let you go, but you should listen. We want to invite Kevin and Bean listeners who have been in your shoes. You've been spoken to for dressing inappropriately at work. We want to hear from you, and we want to find out if it's a struggle for you. I assume it's going to be mostly the ladies, although, I don't know, there could be some guys, I guess, who are wearing, you know, no shoes to work, right, Beer Mug? So if you've been where Brittany is and they've come to you and they said, wow, it's too distracting, or you're too sexy, or you look too hot in that, or the old ladies in the office hate you because of what you're wearing, we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 1-800-520-1067. We're going to take your calls next. Miss Double D, we love you. It's great talking to you on the Kevin and Bean Show again.
Love you guys. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye. I guess what I'm saying is I don't like anybody to make our Miss Double December sad.
Well,
don't go to Brittany and tell her she doesn't look great, because she does. You can see the photo of why she got talked to at work the other day at krock.com or kevinandbean.com, and you can cast your vote as to whether it is an inappropriate look for the workplace. We're taking your calls here on the Kevin and Bean Show at 1-800-520-1067. Did this happen to you? Let's start with Laura. She's up first. She's on line three. Hi, Laura. Thanks for calling. What's going on?
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Bean. Hi, Lisa.
Good morning, Laura.
Good morning. Well, I worked at a dealership a few months ago, so and I used to get talked to like all the time about everything. Like everything I wore apparently was not okay. And the thing is, I'm Hispanic. I'm Latina. I have a bigger butt.
Yeah.
And I mean, everything looked too inappropriate. You know, everything, a pencil skirt.
Are you driving a truck now? Is that your job, Laura? It sounds like you're backing up. What's happening? Or is your ass so big you literally make that noise when you back up?
No, it makes it like the beep, beep, beep. I have to back you out. Yep. Let me sound like when I back up. I'm sorry. I'm on my way to work now.
Okay,
go ahead.
They actually had to develop a dress code after that for all the girls in the dealership because, everything I wore was too inappropriate.
Everything you owned was too inappropriate for the... Was it an auto dealership? Is that what it was?
Yeah, I worked at a dealership. So everything I wore was inappropriate for them. But the thing is, nothing was too revealing. It's just that I couldn't have my butt.
How about that? Crazy times. Thanks for the call. Yeah. Appreciate it, Laura. Thanks. Let's go to Nancy. She's up next. She's on line five here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hi, Nancy. Thanks for calling. Thanks for hanging on.
Hey, Kevin and Bean. Hey, Lisa May.
Good morning.
I worked at a real estate agent. I was the executive assistant, and I was called into the boss's wife's office because my pants were too tight. And they were just hugging the hip, hugging the butt a little bit. And but I thought it was not fair because all the other women who were a little fuller figured wear really tight pants, and they were never,
And
nothing was ever said to them.
Did you point that out? What did they say?
No. I didn't point that out.
You just hung your head in shame.
Do you think sometimes that's the problem? And I don't want to start any kind of war between women here, but do you think sometimes that's the problem is that the women who don't look good in those outfits are the ones who complain about the younger, hotter women that do look good? You think so?
Absolutely. And some of them show cleavage, and I always button up my shirt all the way up. And,
I also think that women who are bigger and wear pants that are too tight aren't sexy. So it doesn't really occur to anybody that that's too sexy. But if you look really good, it's too sexy.
I wish we could hire every person that's calling us this morning. Why can't we hire them to replace Beer Mug? Thank you, Nancy. We appreciate the call. Let's go to Tracy. She's up next. She's on line six. She's working in an escrow office. And what happened, Trace?
Hi, good morning.
Hi,
so I work, I work with the CEO and the president of the company, and so one day I was wearing they're actually nice jean shorts, and so I was wearing jean shorts, but I put on a nice blazer to make a dress a little bit more.
I'm trying to fly jean shorts by us.
I gotta side with the escrow office in this one.
But look, they were nice, Bean.
You're not making a Dukes of Hazzard movie, all right?
And I wore these wedges. They're really high. See, the thing is, I have really long legs, and I'm pretty tiny.
Holy moly.
So it just
Tracy, I'm sorry. The judge has ruled against you in this case, but thank you for appearing in front of the court. We appreciate it. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Evelyn. She's up next on line eight. Tracy's tried to pull off jean shorts and high wedges at an escrow office.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. All right, Evelyn, what's going on with you?
Hi. Good morning, guys.
Hi there.
Hi. Well, I used to work at a bank a few years ago, and I'm pretty small. I'm about like 108 pounds, but I have natural double Ds.
Giant size cans.
And so I can't always find appropriate conservative clothes that fit because they're either too big or too small, and my ladies want to come out and say hello. So I used to get talked to a lot, and one time luckily I had a blazer in the car, so I was able to cover up, and then after that they said that they would send me home if I didn't buy appropriate clothes.
I'm really moved by your story.
Do you have a tear in your eye, Bean?
This is one of the saddest things I've ever heard. Tell me again how you're so tiny, but your boobs are so big that you can't cover them?
I can't. Not with button-ups. It's hard. They just pop out.
That has to be so hard for you.
It is.
It's so hard for Bean right now.
How dare you, Lisa? How dare you suggest that this is for me? This isn't for me. This is all about Evelyn and the struggle that she's going through.
Yes.
Look, if Evelyn's boobs aren't free, none of us are free. USA! USA! USA!
USA!
I don't know if you were listening in the office, Ralph, but tough times in here talking to our listener who was having trouble covering her boobs at work.
Yeah, very sad.
I got a low creepy threshold. No, I just couldn't. I had to flip over to Big Boy.
Really?
See what he was.
There wasn't anything creepy about that. I was worried about her. It sounded like she was in distress. She couldn't find a shirt to cover her boobs because they were too big.
Yeah,
Ralph.
I heard you.
That's a problem.
Yeah,
all right?
I heard you going. Yeah.
From the new album, Songs of Innocence, new U2 here on the world-famous K-Rock, 106.7 KROQ. That is called The Miracle of Joey Ramone. They haven't put him on hold yet, have they? There he is. So we wake up a week ago Tuesday, Lisa, and yes. We've all got, as a gift from U2, the new Songs of Innocence. It's right there on our phones, right there on our iPods. We can't, it's right, it didn't have to do anything. It's just there.
Couldn't be more convenient.
Same thing happening with the phones here at K-Rock. We're trying to use them all day. Every time we pick up a phone, Bono's on the line. What are we supposed to do with that? We can't get rid of this guy.
Because we have to talk to him.
Hey, Bono. Welcome back to K-Rock, my friend. How are you?
Oh, my God. I'm so excited you just played The Miracle of Joey Ramone on the radio. You have no idea how that makes me feel.
How can it still be a thrill for you 35 years later to hear your music on the radio? You understand that you're popular, right?
No. The insecurity is your best security. I'm always amazed that people are interested, and we sometimes respond to that deep insecurity that makes everyone a singer or an artist with overwhelming force. You may have spotted this. But here's the thing. That song is so kind of unique and special and noisy And you know, it's about the reason we're in a band. And this very morning, I woke up to an email from Joey Ramone's brother, Mickey.
Oh,
who
how about
so
that?
Thrilled and so excited, and the family are so thrilled to have their brother honored, and I'm so thrilled. And if you get a chance to read his book, he's a book, I think. It's called Sleeping with Johnny or something. It's brilliant.
Well, when I first
Sleeping
heard
with
the
Joey,
record.
Sleeping with Joey.
When I first heard the record last week, obviously that song stood out because of the mention of the Ramones in there. And that's a band that started, it can't be more than just a few months before you two started back in the 70s. Was their album in Ireland the big bang it was for you, like it was for so many groups in America when that record came out?
Oh, my God. Yeah, it was the big bang because, I mean, punk rock was breaking. But it had come to the attention of my bandmates and indeed myself that my voice wasn't really suited to a lot of the kind of punk rock thing or even the kind of hard rock thing that was going at the time. I would try to sing like Mick Jagger, but it just wouldn't work out. And there was a show, one of our early shows, and somebody shouted up, "More punk in the Monkees." And I realized that I sang like a girl, and I was a bit depressed about it as a young Irish male. And then I realized, but Joey Ramone sings like a girl. He was inspired by all those great sirens as well as everything else. He had a beautiful melodic voice. And if I could be so lucky, I might try to have one of those. So that's how I got the gig.
It's been a little more than a week now since you surprised the world with the new album and the Apple promotion. How do you feel the launch was now that you've had a chance to look at it? How successful was it compared to what your expectations were going in?
Well, you know, I had just heard that 38 million people have listened to Songs of Innocence in the 7 days, which is more than anyone who's ever listened to the Joshua Tree. So now that does not mean that they've loved it, but they've listened to it. Mm-hmm. And if they like it and then love it, we will discover this in time. But all you want if you're a songwriter or, you know, in a band is you just want your songs to be known, for people to hear them. And this was a great, and we're great, grateful to Apple for giving us a chance. They paid Universal for the privilege to do this, as they put it, because they know we're not into free music. But I thought it was an incredible thing for Apple to do.
How are you able to keep it a surprise? I mean, everywhere you go, people ask, hey, when's the next record coming out? And you pretty much had to lie to people that you didn't know. With all the people that were involved, producers and guest vocals and everything else, how come there was no leak on this up until, until last week?
That is the miracle of Joey Ramone. That's a real – you're quite right. And, you know, it's odd because normally when you finish an album, it takes, like, you know, 2 months or 3 months before you put it out. But we had just done it a few days before. And I was sitting there with Kevin Weatherly playing him the songs. And, you know, K-Rock's – very important station for our band. There's no more important station for our band since the very beginning. And he was like, why are you calling me up here? Why do you want me to play this? And I was saying, because I'm really excited about the songs, and I want, with a bit of luck, maybe your DJs will play it. And he goes, yeah, it looks, sounds like we will play it. But I couldn't tell. I wanted to tell him, and I couldn't. So it was, but, you know, that was the fun of it, you know. And remember, this is kind of fun.
Sure.
Sort of, it's the punk rock thing to do, really, is to annoy people, get in their faces. And, you know, if people had a problem with the way we released the album, I mean, I'm sure they'd read about it online or something.
Sure. Of course. Yeah. by the way, the last time we had you on the Kevin and Bean show, I don't know if you remember this or not, we did a breakfast with you two. We interviewed you. You guys played live. We were all drinking Guinnesses at 8 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I just remember how miserable Larry was. Like, to ask him to drum in a rock and roll band at 8 o'clock in the morning looked like the worst day of his life. I hope he's forgiven us at this point, Bono.
Well, have you heard the expression, happy as Larry?
I have heard that. Now we know where it came from. All right.
Well,
we
Larry
only have a
hasn't. But he's great. Yeah, he's playing. The rhythm section are really strong. We worked with such a genius record producer, Danger Mouse. Brian Burton is his name, and
certainly.
So the grooves are really going down. So Larry's very pleased. As long as the drums sound like the end of the world, Larry's happy.
Is it exhausting living your life, Bono? And by that I mean you're so busy with so many humanitarian causes, and obviously running the company that is U2. Do you ever get to just shut off your phone and just be a guy sitting on the couch in your underpants watching TV?
The underwear thing is tricky because, you know, I don't wear any. I'm sitting here with my children. I've got two boys now. They don't wear underwear either. It's not a pretty sight watching the TV. But I've got girls who live in New York, one in Los Angeles. So, you know, I have a kind of itinerant life. But the family travel with us when we're on the road. We're a very close family. A lot of times we got big beds in our house. We end up sleeping in the same bed. It's fun. It's fun.
It sounds like you're able to have a personal life too. That's awesome. All right.
Yeah, no. Of course.
Before you go, and this has been all too brief, and I'm sorry. Your last tour was the most successful concert tour in the history of music. I'm sure you're excited to play these songs live. What can you tell us about that, if anything?
No, I mean, you know, we haven't. We've got some stuff up our sleeve about playing live, and you know, we are. You know, we're coming your way next year, and maybe before that, if we can cook up something. I want to play some of them acoustically because these songs were designed, and the reason it took a while to get there is we wanted. Not just the ideas or the lyrics or the fact that it's a really personal album, but we wanted the tunes, just properly great tunes that if you play them with acoustic guitar on a piano in a pub or, you know, that they would stop people from going home at closing time. They're that kind of tunes. And I want people to be aware of that, that the songs, and when all this hype and it's fun and everything and getting in people's faces fun, but I do want people to just listen to the tunes and I think the best way to do that might be to do some acoustic sessions. So if we can, with K-Rock, that's what I'd like to do. That might be the
that's
first
wonderful.
Thing you hear from
That's me. Wonderful. And that's what I love about you, Bono, and about your group, is you guys are the biggest band in the world, but the music is still the most important thing, and that's the foundation upon which everything else is built. And I know you got to go. Thanks so much for getting up early. Thanks for calling in. We love you. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thanks, dude. Okay. Bye-bye.
Let's talk about flying and sitting next to nightmare people. There are so many people seem to just be unable to get along with society. And understand that, you know, you're in a plane and there are another 200 people there. So shut the F up and don't make noise and don't make smells. I mean, there's a lot of things that you can do to be considerate.
To me, it's like the way movie theaters are. Like, people have just forgotten that there's a way to behave when you're around
that you're
a bunch
in public.
Of people. Yeah. And they just do what they want, and they're on their phones, and they're loud, and they're gross.
And they pretend they're at home.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a website. And I have a question for you, Kevin, before you talk about your new favorite website, and I know you love it so much.
I do.
And
I
that
it.
Is, do you think that civility has decreased in our society and that people are behaving worse than ever before, or are we just much more aware of it because every time there's an incident with a drunk passenger, we all hear about it because of social media?
I have no idea, but I would guess that it's gotten worse.
I mean, if you look at other parts of society, it's gotten worse. So
I mean,
why
it
not
certainly,
on planes?
It feels to me like it has gotten worse as well. But I just wondered if that's because we're all in the Facebook, Twitter echo chamber where we all see every story all the time, and it's still not a real true representation of what it's like for most people.
There was a website that was launched by flight attendant Sean Kathleen in January of 2013, and it's called passengershaming.com, and it's awesome. It really is good because there's so many – there are pictures of people like with hand down their pants and their bare feet, you know, up on a chair in front of them.
I can't – how could you sit behind in front of someone like that with their feet dangling in your face?
There's one where literally both seats are so covered with – it looks like somebody was doing work, but there's paper and trash and literally nowhere for a person to sit.
That one looks like somebody cleaned out a briefcase that had been stuffed full for 2 years, and they just decided, I'm just going to leave all this trash on the plane for somebody else
Let
to pick up,
else.
Is what it looks
yeah.
like.
There's a guy who looks like he's either passed out or is asleep face down at the back of the plane. And there's just a whole bunch of pictures of all these a-hole passengers that are making it impossible for people to enjoy flying.
Now, we want to take some calls from about things that you have seen on planes, passenger behavior or appearance that you have noticed that you thought was bad for flying. We want to hear from you at 1-800-520-1067. But let me ask you guys about dress codes. We long ago gave up getting dressed up to go on flights. People just don't do that anymore.
Right. Thank God, first of all, but go ahead.
I, by the way, most of the time when I fly, and you know me, I wear shorts and T-shirts 364 days a year, but I oftentimes will at least put on a collared shirt when I fly just because I feel like maybe I'll get better service from the flight attendant if I don't look like a bum. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I usually take off my shirt.
Well, I wanted to ask you because there are a lot of these pictures
of the
on,
guns,
this
being the
on,
guns.
On this passenger shaming website. There are so many photos of people who are flying barefoot and quite a few photos of people, and I'm not joking, people, who are flying with no shirt on.
Yeah,
like they get on a plane with no shirt on.
But yeah, you don't know if they get on and then take it off or if they just, you know, get
they
on with it.
They let you on without a shirt.
There's an old guy. There's a picture of an old guy on this site. I don't know. He looks from the side like he's 60, 65, and he's reclining and asleep and no shirt.
And look at the picture right under that of a young guy, a super buff guy who's wearing just sweatpants and no shirt, and he's in the aisle. I mean, you shouldn't be allowed on a plane without a shirt on, right? Or you shouldn't be allowed to take your shirt off.
No.
I'd like to take it a step further and say you shouldn't be able to wear one of those wife beaters either on a plane.
Well, I don't know how far we want to go with this, but it certainly does seem like people have lost the idea that they are only one of 200, and so we all need to sort of just get along and not be dicks.
Right.
But you don't think those wife beater tank tops put you too close to somebody else's bare underarms? I do.
Sure.
Yes.
I'd like a little bit of shirt in between me and your pits.
And it's always a guy. Usually
it's always
a guy.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
I
you're
think
right.
that's reasonable.
All right, I'm fine with that.
So 1-800-520-1067. Let's take one call before we have to take a break. We're talking about doing our own passenger shaming here. What behavior or apparel or appearance have you seen on an airplane? And do you think it's getting worse? Let's start with Paul. He's in Studio City. He joins us on line two.
Hey, Paul.
Morning, guys. How you doing?
Hi, good. Good.
Please tell me that what you're about to explain to us happened in that little bathroom.
It did not. It oh. happened on the seat.
Okay, and tell us what happened.
It was parents changing diapers.
No. Yeah! I don't know how to feel about that, because that'd be tough to do in the bathroom, too. Like, really difficult.
Yeah, but doing it in the seat?
I don't know.
Yeah. Come on.
I mean, I guess they couldn't get to the bathroom or didn't know that that there's a changing table in the back of the plane.
Oh, but, I didn't know.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. And it was, they did their thing, wiped it up, cleaned it up, and handed it to the flight attendant.
Oh, no, they did not. Oh, they didn't even put it back in a diaper bag?
Nope.
Hey, can you take this trash for me?
Oh, that's terrible. Look, when we brought up this conversation in the meeting yesterday, I told you guys that I saw the exact same thing that Paul saw, which is a family in a row changing a little baby on the tray table at their seat. That's what they did. And it wasn't. And I remember at the time I was thinking, you know, it would be one thing if we were in the portion of flight where you weren't allowed to stand up. You had to have your – but it wasn't. It was in the part of the plane where – you know, the part of the flight where you could get up and go to the bathroom if you wanted to.
Now, guys, I understand because I have kids too, but I would never in a million years do that on an airplane. I mean, I would go in the back. I'd go somewhere hiding. I would not do it in a public place like that.
When you fly with young kids, aren't you scared to death, though, too, because you know that the entire plane hates your guts when you get on?
Yeah, but, I mean, I feel for parents. You know, my kids can get pretty loud and rowdy, but as long as we're doing the best we can to keep them under control –
right,
then,
but
you know,
changing a diaper in the seat is not necessarily doing all you can.
That's not cool.
Yeah.
Not cool.
Paul, I'm glad you called. Thanks so much for listening, too. Yeah, I have sympathy. I have a lot of sympathy for people who have to travel with small children, too. And if they're trying to quiet their child or rock their baby or whatever, there's nothing they can do about it. They're doing the best they can. You just have to accept, hey, it kind of sucks that this baby is screaming, but it's out of everybody's hands. We just have to deal with it. I don't ding them for that. But changing a diaper at the tray table, no thank you. All right, 1-800-520-1067. Roxanne, please hang on. Aaron, Lisa, everybody else, will take your calls right after this when we return on K-Rock. Some airline passengers are so terrible they deserve to be called out. That is the headline in this article about the new Facebook page called Passenger Shaming, where people put in their photos, they upload their photos of things that they have seen on airplanes, and we're taking calls on the same topic at 1-800-520-1067. These are crazy calls, Kevin.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine people are this oblivious to everyone around them or just care that little.
Let's go to Lisa in Valencia. She's up first. She's on line seven. She'll get us going here.
Hey, Lisa, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. Tell us what happened to you on a flight.
So I was traveling with my two kids. One was 4 and I think one was 8, and we got upgraded to first class. We were very excited.
Sweet.
And,
nice.
There was a guy sitting between me and my daughter, and I asked nicely if he'd switch places. And he declined, and I said, okay.
Yeah, guys like that are dicks, huh?
Yeah.
Right? Anybody that declines a dick.
And then we go up in the air, and he takes off his shoes and socks and starts trimming his toenails.
That did not happen.
Shouldn't there be rules about what you can and cannot do on a plane? Seriously.
He was trimming.
And he does it, like, the entire flight. He'd put his sock back on, and then, like, 5 minutes later, he'd take his sock off. And
he's not very good at trimming his toenails, then.
Was he trying to torture you?
What was happening to the nails that he was cutting? Were they just falling to the floor? Was he catching them and putting them somewhere?
He literally had his foot up in his lap, and he was trimming them, and I don't know what he was doing with them, but he certainly wasn't catching them.
Oh. So, did you or anyone else on the plane say anything to this guy?
You know, I kind of talked to him a little bit, and he was like in his own little world. The flight attendant went up to, you know, came up to me a couple times, and, you know, do you want a drink or whatever? But no, nobody said anything to him, really.
Wow.
That's unbelievable.
They should be able to roofie people.
I know. I was just wanting my seat in the back.
Thank you, Lisa. We appreciate the call. On the Kevin and Bean Facebook page, Gabriel writes in, red-eye flight to Houston. There were about 20 immature, obnoxious a-holes on the flight for their high school senior trip. They were singing, clapping, screaming, cursing for most of the flight. I really wanted to kill each and every one of them. Yeah, sometimes you do see a group that's traveling together for business or a sporting event, and they do pretty much just treat it like a party bus.
Yeah, take it over.
That's been me occasionally. Okay, just once in a while.
Let's go to Tara in North Hollywood. She's on line six. She has a celebrity sighting that also involves bad pasture behavior.
Oh, all right. Hi, Tara.
Hi, everybody. Good morning. Yes, hi. I'm calling out names this morning.
All right.
So I'm on a flight to Chicago, and I come to discover, as most other people do, that Ron Jeremy, the porny guy, is sitting in front of me. He's on the seat right in front of me. And throughout mid-flight, I am petrified as I'm watching the fallout from him picking the scabs on his bald spot.
Falling
on my tray.
Oh,
no. Wait. Pump the brakes for a second. You're saying he was picking at the scabs on his head and then they were falling on you?
On the back of his seat and then furthermore down to my tray. And I'm just watching this like snowfall.
Dear God.
I hope you sold hedgehog scabs on eBay.
It's a good band name.
No, this was actually in 2009 before all of that really existed. But
that's
mind
crazy.
You, by the way, he's sitting next to a 17-year-old Russian girl. So he still has game.
Yeah,
he sure does. He sure does.
I have game while you're doing that.
That's a phenomenal story. That's amazing. Thank you so much. Let's go to Erin. She's on line four. I'm sure, by the way, before anyone draws the wrong assumption, that Ron Jeremy was just hanging on to her until she turned 18, right?
Of course.
I mean, he was clearly just watching the calendar while they were together.
That was assumed, yeah.
All right, Erin, what's going on?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hi.
What happened?
So we were on our way to New York. My mom is running the New York Marathon, and we're on a flight. It's a late one, and we're adjacent to this lady who just would not shut up the entire flight. And about an hour until we land, she starts dry heaving and just making it puking noises like she's Chunk from the movie The Goonies.
Oh, no.
God.
Good reference with Chunk from The Goonies, though, too. That's strong.
And after each time, she just goes, false alarm. For an hour.
So she was acting as if she was going to vomit but never did.
Yes. Every single time. And then she had flight attendants come and try to give her oxygen. And then she walked off the plane like nothing ever happened.
Oh, man, not again.
Oh, false alarm.
That's about right.
That's gross. At least the K-Rock microphones were there. Thank you for the call. Matt Money Smith joins us next hour to talk NFL. Hulk Hogan apparently very close, pulling into the parking lot. So we'll have him in here in just a couple minutes. First, though, we got a story we want to tell you about. If you haven't heard about this, animal activists are up in arms. Now, generally, that pricks my ears up when I hear an animal activist is involved, because a lot of times they do call attention to bad things and they need to have their message be heard and be listened to. In this case, I'm not sure they're not overreacting a little bit with their complaints about these turtles in Colorado.
There's an art museum in Colorado where they are strapping iPads to the back of a tortoise.
Why?
I don't know.
They're having them shoot movies for them. They're having them be their photographers. And then they're taking those movies and showing them in the gallery. So these are films that are shot by turtles. So the turtles aren't being asked to do anything except just be turtles, just walk around. But they've got an iPad attached to their back. Now, they're under veterinarian's care, and the iPads are mounted on the back of the shell with an epoxy, the same type that is used to attach tracking devices to wild animals. So it is something that's not harmful to the animals. It's certainly not too heavy for a tortoise shell.
I'd like to – A, it's stupid art. But B, why are they complaining? Like, what's the – turtle.
I don't know. You're gluing something to an animal. It just seems weird. Wouldn't a GoPro be a lot smaller and less intrusive?
Sure, but
human just shoot the video is my question?
Well, yes. There is that, yeah.
That's
there
the other that. One?
Well, I'm sorry. We have an expert on the line.
Okay.
Marshall Thompson is his name, founder of the American Tortoise Rescue. And we're going to ask him about it. Hi, Marshall.
Good morning.
Kevin. Kevin and Bean. Yes, you're on the air, sir.
And
right.
Bean.
And you are, I'm sorry, you're with what organization, sir?
Let me say it.
I beg of you. American.
Tortoise Rescue.
Tortoise.
Come on.
Rescue.
Rescue.
Right.
So if you could quickly, sir, and succinctly tell us, what damage is being done to these tortoises that have a device on their back that weighs a couple of ounces that is in no way impeding their progress anywhere?
Well.
Now remember, quickly.
The shell of
the tortoise.
The
we know what we're talking about.
Tortoise.
Has an iPad glued onto the back that doesn't hurt the tortoise in any way.
Is. And.
Is.
Important.
Part of the animal.
Part.
Okay.
Of the animal.
Of.
Right.
The.
The.
Animal. Right.
Animal.
Animal.
Okay. But the shell isn't big. Okay.
As such.
And as such, right?
There should never be anything
right.
This is exhausting.
On
foreign,
right? Okay,
attached.
I'm begging you.
I can't believe we only had time for one question.
The
right.
Tortoises.
Shell.
Right. Okay, Mr. Thompson. Very good, sir.
Shell.
Thank you very much. I have no further questions.
Hey!
Hey!
I think that's more of a woo.
Woo!
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's
woo!
A woo.
Woo.
It's not a hey.
It's the world.
I accept your scorn.
K-Rock, this is the Kevin and Bean Show at 8:08.
There's a lot of ways to get in touch with us here at the Kevin and Bean Show. Of course, we got our Instagram page. We got our Facebook page, krock.com. You can always email us. A lot of people reach out to us on Twitter at Kevin and Bean. And a few weeks ago, we got this to us delivered to our Kevin and Bean account. Hey, guys, did I do something to you? I've lived in L.A. for 16 years and have never been on the show. It's cool, too. I'll just F off. Sincerely, Ralphie May. Not at all. We just didn't know you wanted to come on the show. Please,
oh, man.
Ralphie,
are you kidding me? Y'all are legends, man. I'm a radio geek. I didn't know if I'd just been a jerk or something. And I was just like, hey, man, if I am, I get it. I'm sorry.
Wait. You were serious? You were serious about maybe you offended us?
Yes, yes.
Because we thought that was just a funny joke.
No. Well, okay, then yes. Yeah, that's exactly what I meant. No, I just, well, I was nervous that I upset y'all or something, and I was like,
have
oh,
you burned a lot of bridges or something, Ralph?
I have, and I, it's taken me a while to get mend them back, and or try to, and at least I just say I'm sorry, and then I got peace of mind that, you know, I gave it my shot, and
you didn't offend us in any way, then. I remember.
Oh, good. Yeah.
No,
good.
Not
good.
At all.
Good.
But here's what's happening, I think, because we have a lot of comics in on this show. I mean, and usually it's because they're like you. They've got gigs coming up. Robbie's going to be at the Irvine Improv starting tonight, playing all weekend long. Improv.com, just $25. Meet and greet VIP tickets available for $50. So we have people in all the time because they've got gigs in town. I mean,
yeah.
Saget was here yesterday. Jay Moore was here the day before.
Love
I just
JJ.
Think you haven't had like a publicist or something who's pitched you to the show is all.
Maybe. I don't know. I have to get on to her. I have to.
Well,
why didn't you do this? I don't know.
Seriously.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's like you've got Ralph Garman and you got Lisa May. So,
yeah,
I mean,
huh?
I've been here in essence. You know, maybe y'all feel like you had enough Mays.
That could
Ralph.
Be.
So take me back here, Ralphie, because
yes,
I'm so interested in your story. You burst onto the public consciousness on the first season of Last Comic Standing, which has to be
yes.
now over 10 years ago, right?
Yeah, 11 years.
You did not win, though, right?
No, I came in second. I came
okay.
in second, and it was weird because what I thought was like, this is a travesty, you know, but I'm like, you know, I'm kind of doing TV shows. You know, I went on Kimmel right at that night, and I was doing other stuff, and then this groundswell of people. And then I realized I've seen this before. It happened in Metallica in 88 when they lost the heavy metal of Grammy to Jethro Tull.
Right, right.
Okay.
Which
and it
was absurd.
Like, which was absurd. Uh-huh. And that's kind of what happened to me. And so my first album sold like 1.8 million. And then the next one, and it just kept on going. You know, I've had five albums. I've got two more coming. We just signed a deal with Netflix. And they just keep on selling. And well, I don't get it. I'm just telling me, you know, people love it, though.
Look, if we learn anything from American Idol, it's that the winners aren't the ones that necessarily go on and have careers. Sometimes
that's
it's
right.
Two, three, four, five,
yeah.
Top ten.
That's right.
I don't even know where he is.
I was going to be my question. Where's that fan? I mean, at some point, you're going to run into him as your barista, right? I mean, that's going to be awkward a little bit for you guys.
I had heard from the comic Grapevine, and I thought they were making a joke that he had – this was years ago – that he was he'd taken time off from comedy to work at SeaWorld and one of those action shows.
Huh.
And I
find that hard to believe.
Well, he was really into martial arts,
and
he likes shiny things, and those seals are shiny.
Sure.
So I want to say, if people go, you're kidding, right? And I'll go, no, if I was joking, I'd say he's a waiter at P.F. Chang's. You know, I just didn't know what to say. You know,
well, it's
like
worked
nice
out
guy.
Well for you. Now, were you a guy who was already trying to get into comedy when went on Last Comic Stand? You were. Okay,
yeah,
so
you were
already doing it.
I've been doing stand-up at that time for 14 years.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
Then you're way older than you look. And I mean
I'm
that as 40, a compliment.
I'm 42.
You're how old?
42.
No way.
Yeah.
You got such a baby
younger.
Face.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens. You know, smoke a lot of weed and don't have a lot of stress. You know?
Yeah, well, all right.
You live life easier.
I like it.
You know?
That sounds like a good
plan
to me.
I've got a beautiful wife, though, and stuff. But I started in 1989. I won a radio talent show contest in Arkansas and got a chance to open up for Sam Kinison.
Wow.
And Sam liked me, kind of took me under his wing a little bit. It was the first limo ride I'd ever been in, was the one that he was taking him to his show. And he's like, kid, are you nervous? And I go, no. He goes, kid, there's going to be 3,500 people there, and nobody paid to see you. And I go, okay, I'm a little nervous.
Now I'm a little nervous.
And he goes, well, if you get into trouble, just start screaming and yelling at the audience and cussing them out. The more you scream and yell and cuss them out, the more they'll love you. Really? Yeah. Okay, so I'm doing really good. I'm supposed to do 7 minutes. I'm at 5 minutes, and I'm killing.
Okay.
All right, and then I flip a punchline and a setup, and a joke bombs, and then that joke was predicated on the first joke doing well.
Right.
Like it had, like, the four other times I'd done it, and that joke bombed, and I felt the silence, and I'm like, I remember what Sam said, and I'm like, hey, you stupid inbred Ned Beatty, big banging y'all, bang your mother, it's okay. 3,500 people in unison, boo! Boo! So now I'm really starting to cry on stage. So I leave stage, I'm 17, I'm a little kid. All right, and Sam comes on and goes, can you believe that kid coming out and talking to you good people like that? He will never be a comedy again.
That is awesome.
It's a total setup. Okay, and so I'm backstage, and I'm calling my mom, Collect, on a payphone, okay, to come pick me up, because I left my car at the Shakey's Pizza where the contest was. And Bill Kinison, Sam's brother, comes up and hangs the phone up and says, kid, Sam thought that was hilarious. He never thought you would do it. You set him up perfectly. You know, because he was getting protested a lot at that point. And everybody
loves
it.
Everybody thought he was mean.
Yeah,
right. He needed you to take a bullet.
Yeah, yeah. And I didn't know that. And he's like, he wants you to come to the after party. And I was like, oh, okay. Now, a Sam Kinison after party in 1989 was no place for a 17-year-old. Boy.
No, that's probably
true. I'm 42 now, and I wouldn't go now. There were rails of blow. There was the booze was everywhere.
Sure.
Chicks were everywhere. Everybody's smoking. Sam comes out of a room, does a big line, and goes, kid, order some pizza. And apparently, because I've never done cocaine, because honestly, I don't need another risk factor. Okay, I didn't know that. That's a shock. Like no one ever does blow and eats. Okay,
yeah.
And so I ordered the pizzas, like you said. He paid for the pizza when it came and tipped them three bags of cocaine, three little bags.
God. The 80s were great. Weren't they,
80s Ralphie? Were great. Okay. 80s were awesome.
That pizza delivery guy's like, unbelievable.
30 minutes later, we get a phone call in the hotel room. Do y'all need more pizza? If you need some more pizza, we'll bring it over to you. No problem. So he told me to move to Houston, and he introduced me to Rock 101 KLOL, Stevens and Pruitt, that were huge and instrumental in him blowing up. And being, they'd been with him since the early 80s when he was just a Texas comic. And they kind of took me under at his behest under their wing, and that's nice. Me radio and stuff like that. It was awesome.
That's a wonderful mentor story to have. By the way, we had Sam on a lot back in the early 90s too. He was a frequent guest on our show, and he was great. I mean, there are so many comedians. There are very few who are so unique, though. There was nobody like Sam Kinison. He was one of a kind.
Nobody. And nobody since. You know, there's a lot of people who try to be Bill Hicks. There's a lot of people who try to be Dice. Mitch Hedberg and Dice and stuff like that. But no one can do Sam.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
It's him. It's him.
Ralphie May is here on the Kevin and Bean Show. He's doing the Irvine Improv, a Thursday night gig tonight, and then two shows Friday, two shows Saturday, and then the Sunday night show. You can get tickets at improv.com for just $25. And this VIP seating meet and greet, is this something you do for a lot of your shows, Ralphie?
Yeah. People wanted a way to get the better seats, and they wanted a way to skip all the lines.
Uh-huh.
And
do they
want
to sit on your lap? What do they want when they get to you, when they finally meet you after the show?
Sometimes they do want to sit on my lap. I get a lot of just take pictures, family stuff. But I also get, it's weird because I'm a fat guy and you wouldn't expect it, but I get a lot of dirty, nasty proposals from women, okay, to do
that's
lots of dirty,
rule,
naughty
right?
stuff.
That's why women rule.
Yes. They really do.
They really do.
And their husbands or boyfriends will be on the other side of me and they're whispering this in my ear and I'm just like, what? Oh, my God. And my wife, She gets it too the other way, you know. She gets dudes propositioning her. My wife is smoking hot. She's a great comic too. Her special just came out yesterday, so it's kind of a big day for us.
What's her name?
Her name is Lana L-A-H-N-A Turner T-U-R-N-E-R, and she's smoking. You won't believe it. She's my wife, and she's a mother of two, and she's like 115 pounds. It's crazy. big cans. You know, I still have the best boobs in the family, though.
You don't want to give up that crown.
No. You keep that one until you
correct.
Die.
That's correct.
Ralphie May is here. We'll take a quick break. Come back more with our guests right after this on K-Rock. Making his long overdue debut on the Kevin and Bean Show, the great Ralphie May in studio with us here on K-Rock right now. He'll be at the Irvine Improv tonight at 8 o'clock. Two shows Friday, two shows Saturday, and then again on Sunday night. Go to improv.com to see Ralphie. Tickets are just $25. I'm taking a look at this picture of your wife.
Yes.
If These Lips Could Talk, is that the name of her? Is that an album?
That's special? That was a music album. The new album is...
All right, I don't care about that, DVD, Ralphie. What I care about is she's ridiculously hot.
Yeah, ridiculously hot.
Now,
yeah.
How did that happen? Because you're a big man and you own that, but you've also got comedy in your favor.
Right.
How did you woo this beautiful woman?
You know, we met, 15 years ago in Houston at a comedy open mic. She was doing stand-up, and we were friends for like 6-8 months, and it just kind of grew out of that. It just
did you envision that in those 8 months?
No, not at all.
Just
no. She was way out of my league. I mean, my wife is an incredible woman from a great, well-to-do family. Her father is an executive with Exxon. Okay, they were part of. They lived in the richest part of Houston.
Did they love you?
No, they hated me for years. They still don't care for me that much, but the kids have kind of toned it down a little bit. But no, I said 3 years before our wedding that if we got married, her mom would wear black and it would match the bags underneath her eyes. And she did. So it's like it was amazing that I called that. But no, she hated my guts. I'm not Jewish. I'm fat. Okay. I was the first one to ever stand up to her because she was first time
to
I met
mother-in-law,
her,
you mean?
She wasn't my mother-in-law then. She was mother of a friend of mine.
Right.
And I said, this is how it started. I come in, and this is how much they didn't want my wife to do comedy. I go, Mr. and Mrs. Turner, it's a pleasure to meet you. You should be so proud of your daughter. She's so funny. She's killing. And they go, who are you to tell me about my daughter? Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I see.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, that was our first How to Do It. And that led to a two-hour, what we call the dinner. And it's where it just came down to she was attacking me and what I do for a living. And I go, you know, I don't have a degree, but I'm at the time I was 26 and I have no bills. I've paid off my car.
Yeah, you got a skill. Yeah, you're making a living.
I'm making a living. I love what I do and I do what I love. And I make people laugh. And so I don't think that's. Needs a piece of paper to vilify who I am. You know, I go, do you have a degree? She goes, yes, I do. Are you using it? No. Well, okay. All right, exactly. It sounds like you wasted 4 years. You know, and I spent that having a lot of fun. So, you know, that's how it goes. But, yeah, they did not care for me at all. Oh, my God. But, yeah, the wife
it
is
sounds like it worked out.
Hot. Yeah, yeah, it worked out great. You know, but I've always done good with women. You know, my girlfriend before my wife, her name is Tara Weissmuller. She is the granddaughter of Johnny Weissmuller. She's a model. And so I've always done really good with women, and I don't know why.
What's the secret? I was going to ask. Is it comedy?
Let me butt in and go, hey, Beer Mug, the problem we've just figured out is you're not fat enough. That's what's your problem right now. Listen to Ralphie. He's getting it done.
But or talented, B.
How dare you?
So. Well, I have a lot of, you know, I always said, you know, talk to the hottest chick first and work your way down.
Okay.
Okay?
I like
you
that.
Know, you know, let the market set the price. Okay, you know, that smoking hot chick might have low self-esteem. You don't know.
Now, you
okay?
hope.
You hope.
Right.
You keep your fingers crossed, okay? And then, you know, just work down and see where you're at. And that's just what I did. I took the shot. And a lot of guys don't do that. A lot of beautiful women complain they don't get hit on. They don't get asked out. They don't get...
They say that a lot, yeah. It's
yeah.
And because guys are intimidated.
They're intimidated. Yeah. And I already realized I wasn't getting laid. You know, if the worst thing happens is I go home, I drop a load, eat a turkey pot pie, and watch Sports Center. That's a strong Thursday night. You know? If that's the least that can happen.
That's the American dream right there.
Yeah, yeah. Then all right, I'm already winning. You know what? I'll take a shot.
Do you think, Ralphie, and I'm always fascinated with the path that people take to comedy. Obviously, you started out very funny. You have an outgoing personality now. But did this come out of some sort of bullying as a kid or anything like that? I mean, what was your situation like growing up? Were you always big?
You know, I was a little bit big, but I wasn't nearly like I was just a little bit chubby, but I was country strong, you know, where I'm chubby, but I was just really Herculean strong. I mean, from hauling hay, you know, you get a quarter of a penny a bale and you make $40 a night. You know, it's a lot of hay you're hauling. Okay?
Wow.
And that's just what we did. You know, we were just like that. But no, I never got picked on by people in general. My brother was amazingly abusive.
Well, that's a brother's role, isn't it?
Well, my brother was a little bit more. Oh. I mean, I was 5 years old and he kicked me in the head and broke my orbital bone and my nose. And
oh, my God. So, I thought you were talking about regular.
No, no. He was a real dick.
Wow.
He was a real dick. He's bona fide. Okay, yeah. I haven't talked to him in 5 years because he threatened to kill me because I wouldn't pay for a house for him. All right. And,
wow.
I think you're doing the right thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Just enough. You know, I had enough of that mess growing up, and it's like I'm fine now. I don't need that drama in my life.
Wow. It's so weird to hear you say that because we had Fluffy on not too long ago, and he was talking about how after he became a successful career, his father, who had abandoned him as a child, came out of the woodwork. Not that it was exactly the same that he was looking for something. But when you become famous, I guess the relationship does change, even with people in your own family sometimes.
Yeah, it does. And it's so funny. You mentioned Gabriel. When I first flew to L.A., it was a week after like the second Latino Laugh Festival in San Antonio. And I had met Gabriel there and some other comics. And I was flying into L.A., and my buddy goes, hey, my car broke down, so I got this kid, Gabriel, whose mom borrowed his mom's car, and it was Gabriel Iglesias. All right, So me and Gabe, and Gabe's first words were, "Hey, you want to go to Sizzler?" All right, and I'm like, "Yeah, let's go to Sizzler." I don't even know what it was. I'm like, "Sure." All right, and
Blood Brothers for life.
I know. And at the time, I was trying to be vegetarian. I'm vegetarian. And he goes, "What do you eat? Crops?" Okay, he's hilarious. And so we became good friends quickly. He's a good pal of mine. I'm so happy for his success. I'm a weird comic because I love to see other guys doing good, and it's like everybody's like, I never really worried about them compared to me,
because right.
It's like if you do that, it's kind of a small world,
yeah,
you know. But if you're happy with everybody, it's always wonderful to hear these great things.
It seems like the comedy community is like that. Pretty much. Not everybody, of course. But
not
it does seem
but...
like a lot of people are rooting for each other.
Yeah, because it's such a hard thing to make happen, for any success to happen, that when you finally see somebody do it, you go, great, man. I want to hug your neck. That's awesome. I can't believe you did it. Good for you. Take all these white people's money. Yeah, that's awesome. You know.
Well, I can't believe we're going to have to leave it there for right now, Ralphie.
Okay.
But I'm so glad we had a chance to meet you and have you come in.
Man, I love you guys. Thank y'all for this. This
You're
is
very
so nice.
Kind. Irvine Improv tonight. Let me get out the plug one more time if you want to see the great Ralphie May on stage. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, improv.com. There's tickets for just $25, a little more for the VIP seating and the meet and greet. And I hope you'll come back and see us again soon, sir.
I certainly will. Thank you very much for having me in, everybody.
You bet.